everyone. Can you hear me? Move the mic over a little bit. All right, I'd like to welcome you to our regular meeting on this day, April 5th, 2023. Let's stand and say the pledge and then a moment of silence. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
What time?
Yeah.
I have not heard anything from Mr. O'Brien.
Okay.
Have you heard from Mike?
Mike.
6:15.
All right, so we know Mike's on the date. Okay, the adoption of the...
Madam Chair. One thing, do you all want to have a little discussion maybe under new business? I know there's been some discussion about trash.
Yes.
I've got a little some of my colleague report, right. But maybe a little bit
maybe
more.
Okay.
I definitely need to, and I think it'll come up with VDOT tonight.
It will. Like I said, there'll be a little bit in my colleague report. I think VDOT can touch on it, and then maybe we can have...
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. All right, so that'll be under new.
Yep, under new business, yep.
Okay. All right, can I have a motion?
I move that we adopt the agenda presented with one change.
Okay, under new business, right. We have a second.
A second.
It has been moved by Mrs. Eager and seconded by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye, so it's 3-2. All right, now, County Administrator's report.
Yep, Madam Chair, members of the board, got a few things to report this evening. So one, got some new employees starting with the county. So Melanie Marsh started in the E911 department. She started March 20th as a communications officer. Also, Patrick Robbins, also in E911, started April 3rd. And then in the treasurer's office as a treasurer too, Catherine McLeod started April 3rd. So Fluvanna Social Services is celebrating Children's Fair. It's open to children, parents, and caregivers. It's going to be held at Carriagebrook Elementary School, Saturday, April 29th, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And again, it's hosted by Social Services. There's free and fun activities, giveaways, snacks, bounce house, face painting, balloon art, and lots of other local resources for the community. So remember, Saturday, April 29th, celebrating Children's Fair. Coming up this weekend, Fluvanna County Parks and Rec presents the annual Pleasant Grove Easter Egg Hunt, again, Saturday, April 8th, 2023 at 10 a.m. It's free for ages 12 and younger. And again, please arrive early and hunt. The hunt promptly begins at 10 a.m. Hunt ends when the last egg is found. And if anyone's ever been to the hunt before, it's done and over quick. It takes a lot of planning. It's over in probably a couple minutes. So
y'all need to hide your eggs a little bit.
I think Parks and Rec does a good job of hiding the eggs. It's a free-for-all for plastic eggs and the goodies. So just like I said, it's Saturday, April 8th at 10 a.m. Just be there early. On March 25th, we held at Pleasant Grove Park the Hazardous Waste and Tire Collection event. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. was the Hazardous Waste, and Tire Collection was 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. So it was estimated that there are 118 vehicles that dropped off hazardous waste, and 67 vehicles dropped off tires. Again, we think, as Mr. Spitzer said, rain probably did play a part in it a little bit. It was definitely a little rainy and overcast to start off, so it was a little lower numbers than usual, but still a good event. Parks and Rec had budgeted $33,000 for the hazardous waste and $2,000 for the tire collection. With the lower count, total money spent on hazardous waste was just a little under $14,000 and $1,800 on tire collection. Again, a special thanks to Public Works staff, Anthony Tanner and others, James Winsett, Mike Sharp, Scott Breeden from Public Works for helping. Also, thanks to Parks and Rec Department for the work as well. They did a lot of good work out there to organize it. I was out there slinging some tires with them in the morning. So, like I said, you definitely get your workout out there, and they do a lot of good work. So, like I said, big kudos to Mr. Spitzer and all those that helped. The control burn in front of the sheriff's office, little metal field, actually did happen yesterday, April 4th, 2023. It was over and quick, pretty done, and it was kind of a last-minute notification from the Department of Forestry. Again, when the conditions are right for them, they try and get it going, but again, it didn't take long. So you see here, it's the picture to the right, this is kind of the sheriff's and library complex, and that big yellow highlighted area, that's the kind of the meadow that the control burn was performed. Again, the control burn, or what the Department of Forestry calls a prescribed burn, was done by Chuck Wright of the Virginia Department of Forestry. He had 8 other local foresters. The burn started at 11:30 and took approximately 1.5 hours to complete. Again, we made all notification with homeowners prior. And again, there's a property owner that's near there, kind of by the bottom of the screen, and they were informed and they were well aware of what was happening. And here's just some pictures of what happens. Again, you know, through all the meadow areas, they bulldoze a perimeter around there to prevent any type of fire from jumping from outside of the prescribed burn area. But you can kind of see some of the different pictures of them performing the prescribed burn. And again, with it being springtime, I'm sure the field will be green and things growing up green within probably 6 to 8 weeks there. So last Friday was FCPS had a hands-on flu Vanna day. So big kudos to the FCHS SGA students who volunteered at the dog park on March 31st. They helped out spread mulch in the big dog pen area, pretty much where the grass area is gone. You can see right there. They went and they spread about 3 cubic yards of mulch, and they did that from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Many thanks go out to the following FCH SGA students: Juan Torres Sanchez, Rebecca Kraft, Artella, I'm going to murder the last name. Gigi, Sarah Beth Robinson, and Allie Barnett. And also thanks to Parks and Rec, Matt Stansel. He was driving the tractor and spreading the mulch piles around to kind of make it easier on them. Like I said, it was nice for the students to get out and help on that day. Also on that day, we also had with some other students for the FCHS SGA, and we kind of had a big trash cleanup event on Route 15. Route 15 north, as you kind of leave the county, so it was between Little Creek Road and Lake Road. So this was kind of a big event between Parks and Rec, you know, kind of spearheaded, kind of organizing everything. Certainly we couldn't have done it without the help of VDOT. VDOT provided, I think, at least a half dozen to 10 individuals to be out there that day. They also provided a truck, and I'll show some pictures. We ended up using a Fluvanna County High School resource officer to provide some safety out there to close off one lane of the road. There was a state trooper out there. So what they did is, you know, like anytime they close a lane, they had like a chase vehicle or a traffic vehicle. I'm sorry, it's called a pilot vehicle. Closing the lane, getting everyone around, and you know, they had so that whole stretch is about 1.5 miles. So they started at Little Creek, went south down the Lake Road, and then they came back and went from Little Creek, from Lake Road north, going back to Little Creek. So again, they did about 3 miles. So the FCHS students that helped out was Christina Wright, Aiden Melton, Valley Alther, and Kirsten Boykin. VDOT crews from Palmyra and Zion Crossroads also helped. Again, there was flaggers, a pilot truck for one lane closure, a dump truck, a crash preventer truck, and cleanup workers also that helped out. Fluvanna Sheriff's Office helped, Deputy C. Allen for slowing and watching traffic for the cleanup crew's safety, Also, state police, as I said, were out to kind of slow traffic, and Parks and Rec, Eric Armentrout and Aaron Spitzer were out there. And like I said, Mr. Spitzer kind of spearheaded the event, and he was out there kind of organizing the whole thing.
What's that? I'm sorry, I thought you done.
No, and here are just some pictures of the event. This is kind of the pictures. Everyone met up right around on the glass property right there at the corner of 250 and 15 on the Fluvanna side. So you can see everyone, the students, VDOT, and Parks and Rec that helped. And you can see there's some vehicles kind of stopped at the side. You can see everyone kind of going along that whole route. But they filled up about one kind of dump body truck right there with trash along that little 3 mile stretch. And I think that's kind of some of the things about, you know, some of the later discussion too. You know, we were trying to find a good stretch to really get some good trash cleanup, and that was a pretty trashy looking area, especially coming into our county. So I know there's other areas too that we want to address as well. And kind of going on top of that, and like I said, we can have the conversation with VDOT. I had a conversation after our last board meeting with Scott Thornton with VDOT. So anytime there's any type of issues that the county wants to report, whether it's a citizen, whether it's a board member, whether it's myself, you know, their mechanism for kind of tracking these things and kind of making sure things get done and they can plan more accordingly, on VDOT's website, through virginia.org, there's a little link on there called Report a Road Problem. And so that's for either you can go on there and you can make complaints about trash along VDOT's right of way. You can make a complaint about banner signs or those little business signs that are in VDOT right of way. If there's any damaged roads or anything like this, this is a way for whomever to go on and then just kind of report these things to VDOT as they see them. And once you kind of go to that link here, for some of this stuff, you know, you can go through and see what is most appropriate, but certainly from like a trash standpoint or the signs, you would mark other on that. And so if they get a lot of reports of a particular area, then they can try and, you know, kind of schedule their folks accordingly to make sure that they're addressing maybe the worst spots first. And so, like I said, we can talk a little bit more with Mr. Thornton about that, but we're going to certainly make sure we're using that a lot more, too, just because I've certainly, as driving around, we see some other sections of the county that don't look fantastic as well. And I think, too, as they're moving into mowing season, they try and get people out to pick up areas, too, before the mowing happens along the sides of the road.
Mr. Dahl?
Yes.
What does SGA stand for?
Student Government Association.
Okay, thank you.
So before we move on, who thought of doing that on 15? Like, where did that come from?
You know, I think Mr. Spitzer and I, you know, we were just kind of talking about it. You know, once we found out that SGA, they wanted to find some projects to do in the county. So as we've been talking about this kind of trash issue, and we had some other things, that was one thing that, you know, as we were thinking about some things that, you know, would be a good thing to do, we kind of just kind of put the resources and the energy to kind of focus towards that. Me and Mr. Spitzer were talking about that, and then once we kind of determined a good location, because again, we drove around 250 corridor, I drove up to the 250 corridor, driving around 15, up and down 15, and that section right there, just from a visual standpoint, was kind of the, we could see a lot of benefit of doing that section, but also too, you know, with everything involved, we wanted to make sure it was safe for the students involved. And then once the VDOT residency found out kind of what the project was, they really put a lot of resources behind, you know, really making sure it was a safe event and stuff too, with the sheriff's office, state police, having, you know, the pilot trucks and the crash preventer trucks. So like I said, you know, it couldn't have been done on our own. You know, there's lots of help to get that done. So
yeah, and I hope that this information will get out in the community, because I've been getting some calls about it.
Yeah, we're gonna make sure that we're pushing that VDOT site out a lot more for people to report issues. And then again, because speaking with Mr. Thornton, they actually have two dedicated individuals to Fluvanna County, and not necessarily the two same individuals every day, but they have two individuals every day, I think Monday through Friday, that are dedicated to, you know, picking up trash, you know, picking up trash bags. Is there, you know, dead animals, you know, deer that were hitting the road. So that's some of the things that they do. And also, you know, are there some of these, you know, temporary road signs or banner signs that are in there right away as well? So that's kind of the process we're going through some of that. Thank you. Yep.
You know, I live across from the convenience center, and I really haven't seen a lot of dropping of trash there. But I know through Winfield, that looked like somebody cleaned that up. That was really...
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I had a conversation with Sheriff Hess about this, mm-hmm. too, about seeing what we can do to, you know, maybe certainly fines make people...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe do things less if they get a fine for, you know, throwing out whatever it is. If they're throwing out beer cans, that's a whole different thing. But if they're throwing out trash or their fast food or whatever it is, you know, spoke to Sheriff Hess, and then Sheriff Hess also kind of cued in the state troopers and the state police as well about trying to, you know, if they see anything, enforce it. Anyway, some upcoming meetings. Next week, April 12th, we have a Board of Supervisors special meeting. And really, it's public hearings for the FY24 budget and the calendar year 23 tax rate. Those are both associated with the budget and the reassessment of the tax rate. And then also after that time, if the board wants to have additional budget discussion, there's certainly time to do that. Wednesday, April 19th at 7 p.m., we have our regular meeting, and that is the time when we normally adopt the budget, and then as well as we have normal regular meeting stuff. If for some reason that the board, we can't come to consensus on adopting the budget, we have April 26th as a backup for budget adoption. But we have to call that in advance. But like I said, happy to answer any questions the board has at this point.
Any questions for Mrs. Dahl?
Do we not, last time, when we had it at 7, we moved the next special meeting up to 4 or 5 or something at the Morris Room.
Well, this one with it being more of a public hearing, we would have it here in the Performing Arts Center.
Okay.
And normally, whenever we have public hearings, we have them at 7 p.m. too, just to be consistent.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. One more thing. I know that the park at Lake Monticello, the inclusive park opened too. Was it last week? I couldn't go because I had another meeting.
It didn't open, but it was kickoff.
They did the ground.
Yeah, and then they hope, I think, by May.
May
they
have be open.
It completed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good project.
Mm-hmm. Tony, through Tony a lifeline or mm-hmm. something, or he called me the evening before and asked if I could go.
Wonderful.
Good man. Good people.
Yeah, I'm glad. Wonderful.
And I'll just say, it is amazing that a year and a half before, one person had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
They just saw something and said, well, I'm going to do something about it. And a year and a half later, they've raised almost $100,000 in doing something that, I grew up on those playgrounds, and then my kids did. I just never thought of that. So kudos to them for mm-hmm. that group in Lake Monticello for
and they made it accessible to children with needs
and parents,
physical needs and adults.
What they had seen was a parent in a wheelchair mm-hmm. trying to get through mulch to get up to what their child was playing on and couldn't hardly get up to it, and mm-hmm. one person said somebody can do something.
Right. So we need to celebrate those kinds of things that's going on in the county. We appreciate those people. So now, we will now open our first round of public comments. If you'd like to talk to the board, please come to the podium here and give your name and address and speak to the board. Anyone would like to come to talk with us? I'm disappointed. Nobody.
Anyone online?
Thank you.
I don't see anyone coming off mute at this point. I don't see anyone coming off mute at this point.
No one online? Okay. Well, I'll close the first public comment. All right. We don't have a public hearing. We're going to start with our Child Abuse Prevention Month Proclamation by Rocky Reed at the Department of Social Services. CPS supervisor.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Just let me know when you want me to go next slide.
Sure. So I'm Rocky Reed. I'm with Yuban County Department of Social Services. I supervise child protection and prevention. I also have some of my workers here today. Leticia Williams, Rosa Figueroa, Janaya Booker.
Raise your hand.
And our director, Kim May.
Thank you.
Next slide. Blue Banner County Department of Social Services' mission is to be a leader in collaboration with other community agencies to serve county citizens, promoting self-reliance, well-being, and the best possible quality of life. Our vision is a community where individuals and families have access to support and protection, which promotes health, independence, and opportunities. Next slide. So in 2022 CPS referrals, we received 398 referrals, which resulted in 109 family assessments or investigations being conducted. Of those investigations, 7 investigations were for sexual abuse, with 4 of those being founded for sexual abuse. And I put that in there because a lot of people think that these things do not happen in Blue Banner County, but I want to let the public know that it does happen and we do investigate. Next slide. Family assessments are to be conducted within 60 days while investigations should be completed within 45 days, but we can suspend it if we need to gather more information, such as medical records. Medical records sometimes are hard to get from doctor offices and hospitals in a timely manner. During the family assessments and investigations, we conduct safety assessments and risk assessments to see what determine if there's an in-home case that needs to be opened or family support, just to help the family along a little longer with services. That could be anything from mentoring, parent coaching, it could be helping someone with an electric bill or groceries, just basically meeting the needs of the family, the basic needs of the family, so that we can hopefully not have the abuse and neglect to occur in the home. Next slide. So with our in-home and family support cases, we are mandated to do by time frames to do different contacts. Our face-to-face contact is the main one that we're mandated to do. Those are done in the home with the family, and everyone in the household has to be seen by the worker. They have to be interviewed again to assess safety and risk. So in 2022, there were 618 face-to-face contacts made. That does not count phone calls, that does not count text messages, that does not count emails, that does not count contacts with the service providers as well. So even when we're working with a family, you're thinking, oh, we only see them once a month, but actually we are in communication and constant contact with that family the entire time that case is open. Like I said, most of the contacts are typically done in the home. Occasionally we do meet with the students at school just to follow up with them in their school environment as well. Next slide. As I was saying, we have different reports that the state follows us on monthly. We do our best to make sure that we meet all of our mandates and all of our requirements. At the central region, which we are a part of the central region, at the quarterly supervisor meeting for prevention that was held back in February, Blue Banner was actually one of the agencies that was highlighted for our high response with our families and meeting all our mandates with our families. And so I thought that was a great acknowledgement. I was proud of my workers for that because I didn't do it, they did it. And then we all work together to make sure that we are doing what is needed to be done for the families. Next slide. As Mr. Dahl said, we are hosting the Celebrating Children's Fair April 29th. We haven't had it in a few years, so we are very excited about it. So I'm just asking that you all please come out and support the Children's Fair. Besides what's listed, we have other things that will be going on. The Sheriff's Office has confirmed that they will be doing digital fingerprinting. We also have a magician that's coming. So there'll be something fun to do and something for all ages. And like I said, there's a lot of local resources will be there so people can learn about what is here in Fluvanna County that will help them and their families. So I want to thank you all for supporting social services. Are there any questions?
Any questions?
Oh, thank you for your hard work.
Thank you.
Dedicated to Joliet County.
Great. And I hope we all read the proclamation.
Yes.
Yeah. Very well. Okay.
I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors proclaim the month of April 2023 as Celebrating Children Month in Fluvanna County in observation of Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Second. All right. We have a motion from Mrs. Iger and a second from Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye with one person. Thank Ms. Iger for serving on the Social Service Board. The owl is right in my line of vision. Do you call that an owl?
That is an owl.
And I can't see the hoop. I mean, unless you want me to move.
No, we can move it over.
Wait, I don't want it on Ms. Iger either.
We can pull it towards Mr. Little Birds.
Thank you. That's
is that good?
That's much better. Thank you. All right, now we will go to B, authorization to advertise a public hearing for the VDOT secondary six-year plan. Scott Thornton, VDOT presidential administrator.
So, Mr. Thornton, which thing do you want me to pull up first here?
Dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice, okay.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
That's the end.
What's that?
The next one's going to be the secondary six-year.
Okay, cool. I'll pull this one up, the secondary six-year plan here first.
All right. So for the secondary six-year plan, we have basically projects that were in the plan. We took the out of the 91,000 that's coming in FY 2021. 15,971 is shown going into district grant future unpaved roads, and then the remaining balance, the 75,199, is shown right now going into the countywide traffic engineering services. There are only three qualifying roads in Fluvanna that are left for unpaved. That would be Timber Road, Whitehall, and Old Fork. Old Fork Lane is already on the plan, set to be fully funded in 25-26. Timber Road has the highest traffic count of the unpaved roads. It's 0.2 miles, it's 100 vehicles per day. And Whitehall Road is 90 vehicles per day, and that's 0.6 miles. So if you wanted to add one of those two projects on, we could do that today. And I could get an estimate together and redo the plan, or we could continue to put those in the balance accounts until we get more money, or if you want to wait on that. The other thing on the six-year plan, South Boston Road, the 600-618, if you look across that line, you'll see the balance to complete is now showing at $1.9 million.
Is that on page two?
It is, yeah, on the second page, all the way at the end.
Right there.
And yes, so what we did this year is looked at all the inflations across all the smart seal projects and adjusted for inflation. So at the May CTB meeting, the increase for the 1.9 million, the CTB will vote on that to put those additional funds on this project. They're still doing the design phase. We're working on the maintenance of traffic plan right now and seeing what a public information meeting needs to look like for that project, but that's why if you're looking at the plan, it shows the additional balance to complete the 1.9 million. That's the inflation adjustment that we've seen on this project.
And what is it doing?
So that's basically down by the bottom of the dam there, by Lake Muchell Dam. It's a widening project widening and turn lanes at that intersection.
Okay. Gotcha.
What were those other two? Timber Lane and what was the other?
Whitehall Road.
Yes, Timber Lane.
Okay.
It's...
I don't know. Where is it located?
It's right on the Goochland County line, around 674.
It's not in your district. It's okay.
Something tells me Mr. Sheridan would probably know where it is.
Yeah, right. Both of them are?
I'm sure he's driven a bus.
The other one, yes, it's on, it's off of 250 on the eastern part of the county.
Okay. Thank you.
Do the people who live on that road, do they want you to...
We have not received anything at our residency for any type of urgency to get those. That's probably my guess why they're not already in the six-year plan, is there's just may not be a whole lot of push to pave it. There are some folks that live on gravel roads that want them to remain gravel.
You know, Turner Lane, Turner Road, right off of Central Plain, is that on the list somewhere? Yeah, I know it's not. I don't think it's on the report.
It's not on ours. It Probably doesn't qualify because it has to have over 50 vehicles per day traffic to qualify.
Is that the cut through between Shiloh and Central?
Yes.
I'd be happy to have a traffic count done on it to see if it would qualify.
Yeah, would you please?
Yes, ma'am.
It's like in Rectory Lane, that hasn't been paved, I don't think, but it probably doesn't have.
You're talking about the one off of Six?
Yeah, right, that Dixie there. Is that paved?
I've been through there, but...
It used to not be, but...
I think...
But if they're not asking for it, I'd say leave it alone.
Okay.
None of the roads in my district are part of VDOT.
Okay.
Do you have any idea how long it'll be before they fix 618 and 600?
Well, we have to get it funded, so we'll know something once the CTV votes in May to fully fund that. The plan, assuming it gets fully funded, is to complete the MOT, do some public hearings and public involvement, and probably go out to bid in the next 4 or 5 years.
So the engineering's done, though?
The engineering is done.
And how about right-of-way and stuff like that?
Yeah, so we'd have to move the right-of-way once we do all the public hearings and stuff.
So it's going to be a while?
It's still a few years out, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So if the board's pleasure is to leave the plan as is, all I need is a resolution for you guys to authorize advertising.
And any other things? And again, here's the roads that he was talking about before.
Timber and Whitehall.
Yep. And let me see what else is in here. I think that's part of it. So, oops, apologize here.
Now, the go back down a bit. That road that's going off the Shores, how far are you going to pave that and how far?
Old Fork Lane goes from 640 to the end of state maintenance. So it's about a little over half a mile.
Okay. Good luck for me with that. District. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? We have a motion?
And then there's a motion for this, and then Mr. Thornton also has a presentation really quick, too. And so do you want to have him do the presentation and then do the motion? I mean, the presentation isn't necessarily tied to this.
Actually, let's make the motion.
Yes, get the motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize staff to advertise for a public hearing regarding Virginia Department of Transportation secondary six-year plan.
Second. All right, it's been a motion by Mr. Fairchild and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 4-1 absent.
Okay, and so last month I would have done my quarterly report and this would have been part of it, but I was ill, so sorry for not being here last month. So every year we do a fatal crash review for Culpeper District, and I just thought I'd share some of those numbers with you tonight. Next slide. So in 2020 and 2021, Levana had four fatal crashes. In 2022, there were zero for Levana. And then you can kind of see Albemarle had the most, and it kind of has a breakdown of the localities. But Levana, zero, good there.
So overall, Levana had 9 over the 3-year period.
Over the 3-year period, that's correct.
And these are most of those crashes Zions Crossroads or were?
So the map that we have, they're all over. There's not one problem location. So when we review the fatalities, we really do look for those trends of, is there one location where there's just, they're coalescing, and see if we can develop improvements for that section. In our review, there's not one area that jumps out above any other across, for Louisa residency specifically, but then as far as the district goes, there are higher volume roads for the most part, but not.
And then so for Fluvanna, those nine, there's nothing that's like, okay, well, you have two or three at this one particular.
No, sir, they're kind of spread out throughout the county.
It's notable to me, when we talk about residential growth, that where they've had more than twice the residential growth we've had in the past 10 years, they've had three times the fatal crashes. I mean, there has to be some link to the growth in population of them having more crashes. The fact that they're now exceeding our numbers by so much is going to be more people there to experience that.
So if you go to the next slide, it just kind of breaks down the fatalities by month. Generally, we see an uptick in the summer and in the early fall. That's usually through the holidays, more people on the road traveling, things like that. Next slide. Crash type by percentage. Fixed object off road, people are running off the road and hitting trees and other things off the road. Not too many angle crashes. They're not hitting things in the road. Head-ons are pretty low, so it's really runoff road type crashes.
And I'm assuming probably the runoff road crashes are probably because someone's checking their phone.
That's another slide, so you're kind of. Next slide. Tree is the 21 of those fatalities. Again, these are district numbers, not residency. Ditches, embankments, bridges, utility poles, things like that.
So, I'm just going to say, those are all trees.
Watch those rural areas. I mean, people.
Next slide. Contributing factors. So this goes into your, in speeding, distracted driving, and impaired driving. The distracted number in 2019 is way high. As you can see, the distracted driving numbers have gone down significantly, which is a good thing. Impaired driving has gone up, which is not great. And speeding is back up again. So,
what's impaired driving?
Drunk driving.
Drunk.
Drunk high, things like that. Sleeping is impaired. Next slide, please. So percentage of fatalities while not wearing a seatbelt. This is when a seatbelt was an option. So motorcycles, ATVs, things like that wouldn't count because they don't have seatbelts. 50 to 60%. So, when I was a kid, I used to hear this all the time, buckle up. I mean, the numbers are just, if you crash and you have your seatbelt on, you're going to be a whole lot better than if you don't. Next slide. Age driver, 16 to 35 is generally where we're seeing the most crashes. And then ages not wearing the seatbelt are the 16 to 25. This again, tell your friends, buckle up, especially our newer drivers, seatbelts.
I see the old people like me are doing pretty good. Evidently, we're a little more cautious.
I think I qualify to be in that range too. next slide, please. Residents of driver at fault, not so many out of state. Outside of county is generally the folks that are running off road, but then the in-county drivers as well. A lot of this is for the in-county. Folks are getting in accidents, they're kind of complacent about the areas that they drive in. That's their way home. They drive it all the time, and maybe I'm just going to make a quick trip, something. It's not just people that aren't from around here, although a large part of it is people outside the county, but it's also that number for folks that live there is very high, higher than I think anybody would want to see it. And then the last slide is just kind of crash trends and throughout the counties within Culpeper District. You can see Flevana, Green, and Madison are all very low on that list with serious injury, total crashes, and fatal crashes there. Culpeper did have a low number for 2022 as well. So in that vein, one of the things we looked at and we talked about this year in January was a distracted driving presentation that they're right now they're doing it over in Stanton District, and we wanted to get involved with it here in Culpeper. So we reached out, we partnered with Stanton District and the TFC over there, and we're doing distracted driving presentations. We reached out to the local high schools, Flevana County Public Schools wanted to do it, so we're doing two of those presentations a year. I think they're trying to get one before prom this year. I'm not really sure how that's working out. But that presentation is kind of a all-day thing. We got our operations folks out, we get our safety service patrol people in, and they do a presentation and just kind of talk about driving, how to prepare to go, and just hopefully reach out to those new drivers and let them know what they need to look out for. As Mr. Dahl talked about, we did provide some assistance with the litter pickup. That was a good event. It was 35 bags was the final count on that. So that was a
in a mile and a half.
So it was a good pickup.
And I want to really thank Scott again for the resources. Again, once we heard that Flevana High School had a project they're looking for, and once we kind of put our idea to work, I mean, like I said, what we originally thought were just going to be some signage and stuff like that, they really stepped up and really put the resources in there to make it a good, safe event for all, and get a lot of trash picked up in our entryway into the county. So
yeah, it was definitely a good event. And then just last couple of business items I had, our surface treatment schedules are starting. The notice to proceed happened this month, and they will be working on surface treatment, latex, milling, remarkings, things like that from now through the end of October. As we get our 2-week look aheads from the contractors, I'll be passing those along to staff so that you all just have general awareness of when our contractors will be in the area doing that work. And that's what I have.
Can you just go back that last slide?
Yep.
It's interesting when you, I would have thought during the COVID lockdown, 2020 and 21, I would have thought there'd been a dip in numbers.
It actually went the other way.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's, because you think on one side people aren't driving to work as much, right? But maybe they're just out and about more because they're not at work.
It was odd to anyone in the agency.
Really?
Everybody expected the same thing, and statewide the numbers on crashes and serious injuries went up.
Well, and the thing is, I remember Sheriff Hess said before, during COVID, people were speeding a lot more.
Yes.
So I guess if people are speeding a lot more, that would make sense that people are potentially running off the road more too. And so,
okay.
Oh, I had a question about when you are doing your mooring and you run across advertising small yard signs and et cetera, do you take those up and take them back to your, will you destroy them?
Yes, we take them back to our area headquarters, and what they'll do is they'll try to call the advertiser, mm-hmm. and let them know, hey, we picked up your sign, please don't do this.
Okay.
What we find is a lot of these vendors, they have smaller parties come out and put the signs up, and they don't even know where the signs go. So if I have a business and I give somebody 500 signs and say, I'll pay you $200 to go put these out, I may not know exactly where they go. So they'll say, okay, sure. And then literally we'll pick them up, say on a Friday, and by Monday morning, the signs are back up.
But ultimately,
we do call them, and it's a constant thing.
Is there a fine for repeat offenders, or?
No, sir.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Well, I just, and I've got a short amount of time before going to closed session, but so I don't want to stay down this too long, but we have talked about, I think, last board meeting of how chronic that's become all the signs.
And I saw in the picture of like turkey sag as an example.
It's terrible, and they're just, with all the trash conversation, it's just part of the trash it's becoming, you know, and it's like we're a free-for-all. Like, there's no limits to keep people from doing it. It's just more, almost every day. And I'm starting to hear about it a lot, and just wondering, I guess it comes down to other than, so how do you all decide when you pick them up? So they've been out there for a long time.
So if we get a call, like the picture, then I'll tell the area headquarters, hey, here's an area, you need to, you know, schedule your crews to go out there and get them. And what I asked them to do was, you know, go out, pick up the signs, mark them, do whatever you need to do, call the people. And then that way, a lot of times on the back of the sign, people will put like a number, and that's how the vendor knows who to pay. And so if we've got the same person, we try to figure out who that is and talk to them. We've had an instance where literally our crews picked the sign up, drove down the road, turned around, came back, and the guy was out there putting another sign back.
So is there any...
And we talked to him, and he was like, I don't care how many times you take it down, I'm going to keep putting them back.
So to that point, is there a... How what would be the process to... Would it have to come from the legislature to get a penalty in place for repeat offenders? I mean, at some point...
Yes, we have no mechanism to find them.
Because you'd think that would be almost littering to a degree. I mean, if something's going in someone's property in... Again, the VDOT right away, and it's something that's not authorized. Well, they've got all their contact information on there. You think it would be easy to pinpoint who's doing what? And ultimately, if they're giving the signs to someone, I would think the business owner's responsible for that sign, ultimately.
Yeah, isn't that literally?
I would think if you're prosecuting trespass.
I'm sorry?
Trespass.
Yeah, okay. VDOT would have to pursue that, right?
Yeah.
What'd you say, Tony? I'm sorry.
I said VDOT would have to pursue that.
Well,
if it's in the right of way.
I'm talking about only what's in the right of way, because that's not allowed as a matter of law. The sheriff would be the one that would be responsible for enforcing it, and I wouldn't do it without talking to Tom Law's attorney. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. I'm just thinking there's got to be, maybe it just comes down to our ordinances, which I think we said we were going to review more or something, but.
We can't control it.
Okay. The signs will
be that right away. We can't control it.
Okay. And to what you're saying about they just show back up, like the ones that are paid by Stanley Martin and Southern Development and so on, I've seen them come right back out a day later and they're putting it up. And I've literally seen them put a ladder against the pine tree, go up, screw it to the pine tree, and then put Vaseline all over the back of the sign, so when you try to rip it off, you get Vaseline all over your hands.
Yep.
Liberty did that. So there just got to be something eventually we can do to keep people from encroaching on other people's property and literally littering.
Well, one thing you could do is you could shame the people.
So hopefully I just did.
You might, well, I was thinking of something like, let the board invite the frequent flyers to come and explain why this was happening. And I think Mr. Thornton made the kind of presentation just made here and had them explain why this is happening, what can they do to prevent it, because it is illegal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he would have to initiate that, you're saying?
Well, he's the one that has the information.
Yeah, I mean, I can let you know how many signs or let staff know how many signs and who they belong to, because we collect those and we put them in our dumpsters, but we do try to call the vendors and say, hey, please don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But it's kind of limited.
And did you say that there is something underway to around the lake to clean them up at turkey sag and all that?
Yeah, so what we do is we have, like Mr. Dahl said, we have the report of road problem, and we try to, you know, schedule our work around where those things are showing up. Obviously, if it's safety related, they'll go right to it. We do have staff just assigned two a day. They're usually, dead animal pickup, signs, trash, like roadside. We have sofas, mattresses, things like that on the road, and then spot areas that get called in. And then also, when our crews are out there on the road, they pick up trash. If they're in a work zone and they're, you know, doing patching or something, they'll pick up the trash on that. Palmyra area headquarters, we fill up one roll-off dumpster a week. They have it dumped. That's how much garbage we pick up.
So you do, I mean...
And that's not stuff that goes directly to the dump that we pick up on the dump trucks. That's just what we pick up and on the side of the road and put...
I had a citizen this morning called right before I went to the Firefly event and just about trash and said, well, doesn't VDOT see that all that trash is out there? Well, it sounds like I was happy to hear tonight that you all do see it and you have crews, you have people specifically dedicated to getting it up.
Yeah. Flavanna is a big county for two people.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're happy to help out with these things. We do have mowing getting ready to start up next month, so we have contractors that go out in advance of the mowing and pick up the trash, you know, so we don't blow it all over the road and all over the properties.
And I'll give you an example. I just saw mowing happening around the roundabout down there the other day, and I didn't see, it didn't appear that trash was getting picked up because now that the mowing's been done, I see...
Chopped up.
I see chopped up trash spread out even more and smaller.
Yep. So one citizen suggestion, I don't know if this would go under VDOT, was wondering about posting signs that just say something to the effect of, here's what the fine is for this. But I don't know if that'd be a deterrent, but a citizen asked about it.
We talked about that. There was actually guidance put out from our central office many years ago that the efficacy of those signs is
minimal.
We could post signs in targeted areas if we have an area that has that, but we do not post the fine on it. But we can post the, you know, sign with the can and the line through it for no littering, but there is not post the fine amount.
But there is no fine.
There may be, I don't know. I mean, if y'all have an ordinance against it.
Oh, it'd be our local thing.
Yeah, so.
Well, the reason I suggest trespass, that's a common law crime. So it's already the law of the Commonwealth. That doesn't have to be that's regulation.
Yeah, but what Mr. Thornton said, he made it sound like if the county has a fine for throwing out litter. So there's kind of, I guess there's two things I'm hearing.
Sometimes counties have an additional fine on top of it. So okay. If I believe it's law enforcement, I'm not law enforcement, I believe they can write a ticket and there's a fine for it. But if there's some localities have a higher fine to that, so.
So do we have anything in motion or on the suggestion of calling out these, whoever's doing these, and we haven't done anything on that, right?
No. I think that we need to educate the community. I mean, we need to get this out to the community and let them know what we're dealing with. Now, Flavanna Review will probably do something. Why can't we do an editorial or something and have them interview and talk about it? You can put signs up in post offices. You can send it out to churches to put on bulletin boards. You got to let the people know before you start slamming them with some kind of fine.
I don't want to take away from anything that we did the other week, but if you ride down 15 now, it's already trash back.
Yeah.
So
I always say I clean my road frontage on 53, and next week I'll have a full bag again. And it's most of it's stuff that's not getting, it's not like it's blown out of the back of a truck.
Right.
Most of it's stuff that people
and a lot of it is not through venues, it's people that's coming through.
I think it's probably a combination of both, but there's a lot of it, and I think the one thing that would deter people is if it hit their pocketbook.
I agree.
Littering. I thought we used to have signs about littering $500 fine, but that's no more.
We don't post the fine on that. We will post the sign on targeted areas, but we don't put the fine on them.
So I'd say, even if we need to do this another meeting, I don't know if it needs to be while Scott's here, but... If it's next meeting, I'd say let's immediately.
Yeah, we have it on the agenda. The new business.
Okay, gotcha.
So we can talk more. Okay. All right. Any more questions, Mr.
Paul? I just wanted to commend Scott. He down Garden Lane, people were going. Ends up GPS would take people all the way to the gate at Jefferson Drive. GPS thinks you can get through. Mm-hmm. Then you got, big trucks sometimes having to try to back all the way up, and it's backing into people's yards and Lake Monticello, blah, blah. And he quickly put up a sign after a citizen requested and saying no turnaround or something?
No outlet.
No outlet, no outlet.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Enjoy your Easter.
You too, thank you. C, small purchasing procedures amendment, Ms. Donna Allen, our purchasing officer. I don't think, we didn't have a motion.
Yeah, we did the motion before, we did the motion, then we had the additional discussion, that's something that was not related.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We're gonna be changing our small purchasing procedures, and the major changes will be for our vehicles only, including our cars, trucks, and vans. The small purchasing would be increased by $200,000. Currently, our vehicles are included in, policy up to the goods, which has a limit of $100,000. There will be no change to the number of quotes required for the vehicles. Zero to 5,000 is one quote, greater than 5,000 to 30 is two quotes, greater than 30 to 60,000 is three quotes, and greater than 60,000 to 200,000 vehicles only are four quotes. Reason is due to our high demand in the county of having a great difficulty of purchasing cars. The county has attempted numerous times to use the state contracts and cooperative agreements to buy vehicles, only to be told that we must pre-order only for the next year available or not available at all. The county also has issued an IFB for the vehicles in late 2022, and we had no responses from any of the dealerships. Likely, since the vehicles are often sold so quickly by the dealers, we must think it's worth the effort to respond to the county solicitation. This would provide other avenues for purchasing of the vehicles. The county has a CIP funding for the vehicles purchases in 2022 and 23, and desire to use the bond financing that to expire on July the 31st of 2023.
So again, just for this one, all we're doing, we already have a policy in place. Right now it's currently 62 to 100. The only thing that's changing is right there in red. It's 60 to 200. For vehicles only. That's the only change to this piece of the purchasing policy on that section. Section 2 and 3 are just their state code clarifications, nothing major there. And then you want to touch on section number 4, Donna?
Uh-huh. The formal written contracts require that all contracts $10,000 or more, since the Virginia Public Procurement Act specifically requires a written contract with a specific provision at any contract of $10,000 or more. Currently, a formal written contract is required for any of the contracts in an amount of $3,000 or more. The attachment of Attachment A is one page of the purchase order form recommended, not required for all of the small purchases from $500 to $10,000.
Yeah, so again, just this, currently right now, for anything technically over $3,000, we have to have a contract. This is moving it up to $10,000 because honestly, a lot of the jobs that we do for things, I mean, $3,000 is really, in the grand scheme of things, is a small amount, and a lot of public works projects are easily above that. So doing a contract for that, something has to go to the board for everything below three is not efficient. So those are the changes, basically changing the amount for what we can buy for vehicles and then changing the contract amount for what needs to come to the board. So any questions?
Any questions for Donna or Eric? Thank you.
I'll make a motion. Move the Board of Supervisors approve the amendment. The small purchasing policy is set out in the attached proposed amendment 4.4, small purchasing procedures.
Okay. Second, please. Second. All right. It has been moved by Mr. Fairchild and second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 4-1 missing. Okay, the next one is the J.P. Morgan Chase Bank debt proceeds project.
So I'll handle this one.
That's for you, Aaron.
Yeah, I'll handle this. I'm trying to get through quick. So again, we took out debt proceeds to buy a lot of equipment. And so, you know, got a fantastic rate. Rate was great. We had an 18-month spend down on those proceeds. The one thing that we've had with supply chain issues on the vehicles and things like that, we think we can move forward and we can get everything done by the August 3rd spend down date. If there's a couple that we maybe have some issues with, we may be coming back. But the one thing we know for certain is there's some money for a public works building. Again, the money wasn't necessarily enough to finish the whole thing when it was originally approved. You know, again, as everything you hear, cost increases and things like that. So there's additional money in fiscal year 24. Basically, to go back to that, there's no way we're going to get this $93,000 spent by August 3rd. So what we're recommending is to do a flip-flop of some CIP projects. Again, the sheriff's office has vehicles in the current budget this year for fiscal year 24 that we're currently considering. What I'm suggesting is move some sheriff's vehicles up for right now, if the board approves this, and move the money that we are going to spend to do the storage building, move that out as part of the FY24 budget. So it's really a flip-flop of the spend of those dollars. So again, 93 was budgeted for the storage building. The sheriff, spoke with Sheriff Hess, he's got a quote to get two vehicles, and the cost of that is $101,000. So again, the 101 is more than the 93 that I'm requesting, but we've earned interest on those proceeds sitting there too. I think we've got probably around, as I'd last checked, about $30,000. So what I'm requesting is flip-flop them. The 93 would be a wash, but we would increase the sheriff's amount from 93 to 101. And I'm not sure if that makes sense. But we're trying to make sure we don't have to give any of these proceeds back. We want to utilize them. We got a 1.3% interest rate on these proceeds, and we want to spend them all down since we took them all out.
Any questions?
So we have two motions.
Two motions.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of fiscal year 22 CIP debt proceeds in amount of $93,000 from the Public Works Equipment Storage Building CIP to the Sheriff's Office Vehicle Budget CIP.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion from Mr. Fairchild, second from Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Chair votes aye, so that's four with one missing. Motion number two.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $8,000 for the Sheriff's Vehicle CIP budget, with such funds to come from earned interest in the J.P. Morgan Chase Bank.
Second. All right. Motion by Mr. Fairchild, second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, that's four with one missing. All right. Next we have E, and he is on his way. Pleasant Grove Athletic Field
Fight.
This is the director of
Good evening. How y'all doing? Good evening. So I'm here to give like an update on the status of the lights from the 22 CIP for the athletic fields at Pleasant Grove Park.
And let me just make one comment before we start. This project, these proceeds were also included in those debt proceeds, and they have to be spent by August 3rd as well.
So next slide. So for our soccer fields, we're going to need 10 pole lights to light the soccer field, and it's $618,412 for just the soccer fields. So, and then in the CIP, we were given $685,000 to do this project for all the fields out of Pleasant Grove. Well, we're not going to have enough money, as you're going to see here in a second. So the next one would be the softball field. So the softball field needs 5 lighted poles to work. It's $175,578. So, and then the next slide is the parking lot. So the parking lot, the board approved $50,000 for this project in June 2022. So this is already money that we're going to use. But I'm going to take one of these light poles and put it at the softball field for their parking lot. Does that make sense? And that's not going to be any added value, cost to that.
So you're going to have one.
We'll have the one on the top side. Yep. we'll have that one for soccer parking, and I'm going to take the bottom one and put it up top for softball, for the softball field.
Assuming the board
approves the money for the softball field.
Yes.
We saw a need that we were missing that light up there if we were going to park cars with the field lighting. So I did talk to Musco, and they were able to do that.
Are those multi-light poles? Do they have multiple bulbs?
Yes, they will. I think they're each got 6 to 8 bulbs on each pole. So it's enough to light right there where they would park. And it's shorter than the distance from pole to pole, so it's not going to cost anything.
You know, the poles are out there, aren't they?
Not yet.
Okay.
No, the poles are at a storage, at somebody's storage shop that they're going to be putting them up. The people that got the contract for the $50,000. Next slide. So, and as I said, in the FY22 budget, CIP budget, there was $685,000 to put in the lights. We got a quote from Musco with the JMU VESA contract, which is a cooperative contract for a state contract. And it was $108,990 over the money that I have. So it came out to, I think it was, I have it.
$783.
So what I'm asking is for the board to take money out of the fund balance too, so I can finish the project for the softball lights, because I don't have enough. Or I just do the soccer fields and not the softball field, because I have enough money for the soccer fields.
Do all of the soccer fields?
Yes. And the reason I would do that is because we already have a lit baseball and a softball field out here. So that would give us a lit soccer field.
No. My question was, do all of the soccer fields need to be done? There's 3 soccer fields.
They do, because they're running out of practice time. There's more kids, and you get into the spring and the fall, and you lose your daylight. So they have to stop practicing by 6. They only have an hour. And if we would light them all, then they all could practice until 8:30. But
I thought about that question too, but I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, because if you lit some of the soccer,
they're different sizes,
and then went down to, okay, that's a good.
So we have a big field, which is our Bermuda field, which is like a regulation. We have the middle field is usually split into 2 for the U12s to U10s, and then we have on the first field. It is up a little bit, and then we have a couple little goals for U6. So they're little, really small fields. So the way we line all the lights up is to be able to light all of those for everybody. They don't all practice on the same fields. It's all different because of the different sizes.
But if you did some portion of that,
somebody would get left out.
And then went down. There's not enough money, I'd imagine, left to go still down to the softball field. In other words, it would be more expensive to do some portion of this, because you still have such long trenching to get down the softball field.
And the softball field is going to come off from the top down, and then they're going to meet at a junction box. So the power's kind of in the middle of both fields. It's down there almost for the disc golf course. There's a power box right there that we're updating. And there's one right behind the soccer field we have to update.
So, but because they've been asking me,
so that to do all,
I would imagine, this is what I said to them. I would imagine that to do all, let's say we don't take the rest out of fund balance,
mm-hmm.
that to do all of the soccer fields would be less money than doing a portion of the soccer fields and then running down and doing the softball field.
Yeah, I'd have to ask them. I'd have to get a new quote for that. But because you're splitting up some, so I don't know how that would go.
Yeah.
I would have to ask about that.
So how did we, was there so much time in between when we did the original and then when we got the pricing that, how were we that much off?
And well, some of it was Musco, whoever they contracted with, they said that person was a little bit higher than what they thought was going to be, even with the state contract. And we got the best deal we could with the state contract.
And if I remember correctly, these, we're really getting the lights for free.
Well, the The parking lot
That's
lights.
The parking lot.
Okay. They were the ones that had the parking lot lights.
Remember,
they were donating the lights.
Remember, this one right here for the soccer fields and this here for the softball fields. There's no donated lights for that. That was just a CIP project. Mr. Spitzer got an estimate some years ago when it was going forward. We took out debt financing to do a bunch of things, and you know, as you've seen with everything, price increases have affected a lot of projects. So that's that. We originally had $685 to really do these two portions. It's like $793 now. But this one, the lights were donated for this, and the board approved the $50,000 to install the lights for this. So this piece is basically covered right here. It's just the soccer fields and the softball field that was a CIP project, that there's not really enough to do that.
But if you didn't put lights in the softball field, presumably you wouldn't move that because you wouldn't have electrical connections for that.
I'm sorry, say one more time.
If you didn't put lights in the softball field, you wouldn't move the lighting for the
parking. No.
Because
it wouldn't be no need.
Yeah.
When was the original approval?
$685.
No, when?
Oh, it was July 1, 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because it was part of the fiscal year 2022 budget.
Okay, so.
And I imagine it's more expensive to have them come back down the road and just do the separate thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it'd be any cheaper than the 120, 175, when it, you know, 176 it is now. It's going to go up. I would assume.
And why the softball field and not the baseball field?
We have not had any
so much use.
Well, we don't have a 13-year-old Babe Ruth league in the county, and that's what that field's for. It's a 300-foot fence. It's made for kids that grow out of this field for the next level, and we don't have that. So, while to me that's a waste of money right now, when we don't even, you know, they practice on it. The kids, they'll move the bases and they'll practice on it, but they don't play out there. And that way, softball has another place to go to play in the evenings. And if we had to, baseball could kind of use that field if we had to for something. Like if we had a tournament, you know, maybe they needed that field for a night for a tournament, and we could put a, you know, portable mound out there, and they could use both fields.
Now we have two motions, and the first motion and the second motion, depending on needed, if A, B, and C are selected. Above.
Yeah. So motion. So, yeah. Motion number one. So if the board says we want to do all three, the soccer field, the softball field, and the parking lot lighting, it's the dollar amount $843,990. Right. If the board says we don't want to go above the $685, well then you're really only choosing A and C because we don't have enough money to do B.
Right.
Then.
So you don't need to make motion two.
Well, I've only got soccer players in my district, so. I think we should do it all.
What if you think that we need to get the 108.990 assigned fund balance to make this work, A, B, and C?
I'm curious of other opinions.
Tony, go ahead. You said.
I mean, if the demand is there and we're trying, you know, the purpose was to bring lighting to the field to increase use, to make it more available for tournaments and attracting other people, other organizations to come and use our facilities. Ultimately, if we're doing that, then you would foresee wanting to light all of the facilities there. And I just imagine that the cost of lighting the softball field 3, 4, 5 years from now, instead of being $175,000, will be $250,000. So, and I think once you have lights out there, you can expect residents to come in and say, "Well, why aren't there lights for this?" So, I just think you're delaying the inevitable and costing more money.
How much use does the softball field get?
Every day, in their season. So. They'll practice they try to get like two practices in right now probably with the light, because they can practice about 7:30 without not being able to see the ball.
Two short practices because of light, and then once the sun is up more, they'll try to make it two
And this way they'll be practicing about 9 o'clock at night usually, I think is what they do out here with the lights. Right. So we give them a nut, like especially in the fall, you know, after September, there's almost no practice because it's dark at 6 o'clock almost, 6:30. So this will give them an opportunity to practice.
The numbers are notably going up again, and
all the athletics, I believe, went up. Soccer, baseball, and softball all went up this season.
And just knowing softball more, I mean, there was a time when we used to send kids to Remo to the field. There was a great field, just a long ways to go. And I think the program is getting back to where its needs are. I think they told me they even tried to be able to use the baseball field at the middle school.
They've asked me about other options.
Yeah, yeah. So they're certainly hitting a ceiling.
I don't have but four fields. So if they're not lit, then there's only a certain amount of time you can use them.
Right. So what do you think?
Oh, I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I would agree that let's do A, B, and C.
I think that when they're playing ball, they're not looking at their cell phones, so that's probably
the biggest.
So, you're right.
Plus, there's less trees.
You're right. They're giving them. Yeah, I agree.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve as of April 5th, 2023, the purchase order under contract number UCPJMU6542 and participation agreement between Musco Sports Lighting and Savannah County for the following: A, soccer field lighting project for $618,412 as a cooperative purchase. B, softball field lighting, $175,578 as a cooperative purchase. C, parking lot lighting project for $50,000 as a sole source purchase, as only one source was practically available. For lighting at Pleasant Grove Park for the total amount of $843,990. And further authorize the county administrator to execute the purchase order and agreement for all of the projects selected, subject to approval passed to the form by the county attorney.
All right, we have a second.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. That's four.
And since Chris is
all right,
for the
motion number two.
Christopher. Let me ask you, okay. I'll make the motion number two. I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $108,990 from unassigned fund balance for the FY22 CIP for the Pleasant Grove Athletic Field Lighting Project.
Second.
And now, discussion. Do you want to ask something?
Yeah,
we
thank you.
Do the motion?
They should be done by August 1st.
Nope.
So we're going to try to start in June. It's 8 weeks to get the equipment in. It's needed to be done by August, so they said they'd be done by August.
We had in the contract that's got to be done by August 1st.
Okay.
So we're going to start June 1st of June. So soccer should be over. Softball's almost over into their, you know, their playoffs, all-stars. So it should be perfect timing, and then we're ready to go for the fall.
All right. So Mr. Fairchild made the motion. I forgot who did the second. Did you do the second?
Mr. O'Brien.
Tony, you did. Mr. O'Brien, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Good.
Thank you.
Now, let me have your attention for a few minutes.
Just us or here?
Y'all. Okay. Yeah, but they have this. Let me tell you what time it is. It is now 6:21, and on our agenda we say work session at 7 p.m. We still have to finish consent agenda. That's pretty fast. But we also, I don't think we have enough, but we said we're going to talk about trash during new business, and they need to scratch that. We have another public comment.
We got presentations,
two presentations.
We can go
that
quick.
That could be 10 minutes. We cannot continue doing this. Some way the work session, some way it's got to be scheduled differently. Because we can't rush people who want to talk and talk about a situation. And then say we're going to come back at 7, we come back at 8, people sitting here waiting. I just think that is, we can't do that.
The only thing that we could do, again, being in this space, I mean, we go back to, we have time constraints in this space. Mm-hmm. And really the earliest we could be in this space is 4:30 from kind of cross.
We wouldn't have everybody here anyway.
Well, if we have three, we go.
Well, I said, Madam Chair, you allowed that discussion happen prior to the second. Just saying.
Well, we really do need to...
That's what you're saying. I'm not sure what the answer is.
It's kind of rude to say that, and then we lost an hour. We have lost an hour because we've come in here five. We need to seriously think about where we're going from here. We're going to stay in this building until my administration building is built the next 5 to 10 years from now. So...
We're supposed to be going to be around budget season, right? I mean, once we're out of budget season, it's not an issue, really.
No, it's the same thing.
Shouldn't this be followed?
Well, we go into closed session during regular meetings after the meeting. So, I mean, I would never want to get in the way of, for a time thing. If we meet about something, we only get to talk about it once, and it's worth a robust discussion, then we just got to talk about it. But yeah, I think during budget season is the big issue because of piling on a budget work session and then regular meeting.
Well, then we need to do something during the budget season. Then we do our budget work at a different time or something. But let's just think about it. I don't think we can continue in this thing.
So maybe since we only have the end of April to finish through the budget part of it, and the mass of it happens during the budget season, maybe we postpone that for another, somehow or another we put it for another time that it comes up this year to prepare for next year's budget season, of how we can maybe schedule it different. And I don't know what those answers or thoughts would be.
But I just feel like it needs to be done. However we do it, it needs to be done.
We'll put our heads together. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before, and you know, we certainly realize that you know, we're tight. You know, if we're in this space, we've got a time constraint, and then so we really can't get people here early. We maybe a half an hour early, but is a half an hour gonna change things a lot? And then if we do get a half an hour early, is that gonna work for everyone's schedules to get everyone here at that time? So right. That's
well, let's leave that question when everybody's here.
Yep. Certainly.
And we'll see. Okay. And next presentation is Library Pavilion, Calvin Hickman, who is our Director of Public Works.
Good evening, Board. I'm happy to announce a partnership with the Fluvanna County High School Carpentry Shop and the Public Works Department to erect timber frame pavilion up near the library. The carpentry shop has designed and built all the material and supplied all the material. Mr. Paul Cherico, who heads the carpentry shop, is in charge of that. And then they'll come out and erect it, and the Public Works Department will supply the footings and the metal roof to that. And you can see, let me go back one.
Go back one.
Right there, you can see that drawing. You can see the little yellow spot there. Yeah, that's where we're proposing to put the pavilion.
And this is the library building right here.
Yeah. You can see it, yes. So you can see it from the parking lot. You can see it from inside the building. It's 16 by 24. At this point, we are not going to establish a wooden, an option could be a wooden floor or electricity into the future. But at this point, we're not doing that. We're just going to put footings on it and erect the building. Mr. Cherico's class this year wants to do the work. They've already built all the components. And so, you know, high school doesn't last but what, the end of May, so they want to do it prior to, you know, graduation this year. So you can see a resemblance of the building. This is one that they have built over in their Woodland Park over next to the high school. This one is 16 by 16. It does have a wooden floor. And you can just run through those, Eric.
And they make their own wood, right?
The wood is donated to them.
Donated.
Yes, okay. And they have the tools to refine the wood.
They mill all the wood. They've got the wood mill.
Yeah.
And again, from the county, the expense would be the footers and the metal. All the wood components, they provide that. But there's some costs of the county, which we're not requesting funds. It could be covered out of Public Works existing budget.
Exactly.
And this is just kind of some different looks of an example of one that they've done.
Yeah, if you're familiar with timber frame, this is just idealistic.
Where did that come from, the idea for this? The coop?
Do you mean?
Who got that on the county's agenda to build this?
I approached Mr. Paul Chirico.
Okay.
See if we could have a partnership somewhere with the high school. And I'm glad. It's might come to fruition.
So put picnic tables in there, some where people go in to read or?
Exactly. People in the library could go outside and
have lunch.
Read their book, or people that are hiking on the trail could go in there and eat their lunch, drink a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. It's right at the parking lot. People would very easily walk up to it. I can envision benches, perimeter benches on the inside for people to sit down. I can envision electricity if we put a light out there, a wooden floor. It could be a small event happening out there. People could come out through that building.
And we could see these types of things, you know, maybe every year they do one. Maybe it's, you know, adding some additional ones at Pleasant Grove Park, too. You know, there's discussion about that as well.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Hickman?
It's great.
Okay, yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. All right.
Wonderful for the school, too.
Yes. And utility scale solar revenue options.
Yeah, I'm just going to go through this quick. There's some comparison revenue calculations we're still working out, so we don't have that for the board. But again, we just kind of want to give you a brief overview of solar, and then but we may want to come back with something at the next meeting. So one, under our amended county code, chapter 22 zoning, so a solar generation facility, utility scale, is a solar energy conversion system producing 2 megawatts or more of electricity. So again, that's in county code, 2 megawatts or more of electricity. So in Virginia, there are two ways and localities need to choose how they're going to, tax to a degree, solar generation facilities. So one, the first threshold is that a solar generation facility has to be 5 megawatts or greater. So the options are, there's the default option is for counties to levy a machinery and tools tax and real estate tax on the capital investments of the facility. The second piece is a locality may adopt an ordinance to replace the M&T tax, which is called a revenue share agreement. Under this model, localities get income from the solar facilities at a flat rate of $1,400 per megawatt per year. And generally, these types of agreements go into place for, you know, I think 30, 35 years is the time that it would go into place. So, you know, if you had a, you know, whatever it is, whatever, you know, megawatt facility it is, times 1,400 per year, that's the revenue you would get per year. Now, every locality is different because every locality taxes machinery and tools. They have different depreciation schedules, whether it's, you know, they depreciate a certain amount per year. They have different periods that they only tax things. So for instance, like Fluvanna County, M&T is depreciated at 25% in year one. And if you remember from what the commissioner spoke about, we only tax those for 10 years of their life of being in service. Some localities may tax them for as long as they're in service forever. Some of them may not depreciate them as much. So these are kind of the taxing methods. And again, by choosing this doesn't mean that we're going to approve any types of facilities. This is just kind of the selection model that if we approve one, this is how we would tax those types of facilities, whether it's called a revenue share agreement, or if you want to call it an energy tax, or you do just a regular default machinery and tools real estate tax. So we are currently, I've had some conversations with VACO, I had some conversations with the commissioner. We're still trying to work out some of the financial comparisons to really get a good grasp, because it's complex and there's lots of different depreciation things that are involved with this as well, for how it's depreciated. And you know, there's also things too, once it gets in, let me see if it's in here too. Let me go back. Anyway, there's some differing models too based upon the size of megawatt facilities they are. So again, if it's 5 to 25, those are taxed and assessed based upon the locality. if it's greater than a 25 megawatt facility, those facilities are then determined what the value is based upon the State Corporation Commission. And the State Corporation Commission then assigns a value to those rather than the commissioner coming up with a value for those and our assessors, you know, if it's a 5 to 25 megawatt facility. So there's a lot of different things in play, and so we're still trying to figure out from Fluviana County, looking at the way we tax things, what is the most advantageous. We've got a model, but we've got a model in place, but we're still trying to just make sure we've got everything accounted for in some of these models. In addition to these two pieces of how you tax them, there is also something called a siting agreement as well. And so you've got those two pieces. In addition to that, a siting agreement says, so again, under Virginia Code 15.2-2316.78, there's something called negotiations and a siting agreement. So an applicant for a solar project or any energy storage project shall give the host locality written notice of the applicant's intent to locate in such locality and request a meeting. Such applicant shall meet, discuss, and negotiate a siting agreement with such locality. And then under the siting agreement, what it says, it may include terms and conditions, including mitigation of the impact of the project, to financial compensation to the host locality to address capital needs set out in one, either the CIP adopted by the locality, current fiscal budget of the host locality, you know, fiscal fund balance policy adopted by the locality, or assistance by the applicant in the deployment of broadband. So again, you've got kind of two pieces. There's the way that we kind of tax it or collect revenue from it. But then in addition, you have these things called siting agreements as well. That is in addition to those first two pieces. So depending on which way we go, if we find that the $1,400 per flat megawatt is not the most advantageous model for the county to go with, then we wouldn't need to do any type of ordinance. Because if we do the 1,400 megawatt, we would have to do an ordinance. Mr. Payne and myself have looked at it as kind of a simple draft ordinance. We kind of have something in mind and in play at this point if that's the route that we're going to go. But if we determine that's not the most financially advantageous for the county, if we just go from the straight taxing model, then that ordinance wouldn't be needed. And so there wouldn't need to be anything further. But for the board to really say which model we want to go with, we've got to provide the board the financial comparison, and we're trying to finish that out because there's some technical pieces in there that we're not 100% sure on a few pieces, but I think we're pretty close to having that sussed out at this point. We just wanted to kind of give the board just kind of a brief overview of some of that. We hope we can bring something more finalized to the board at the next meeting to make a determination on that. So we hope to have something to the board at the next meeting to make a decision on what model does the board want to go with, and you know, based upon the financial analysis.
I assume the machinery and tools tax is applied evenly across. You know, you can't like say this type of machinery and tools, or can you? Is that up to the Commissioner of Revenue?
Well, I mean, I think maybe a locality could maybe, well, I don't know if the locality could have a, are you asking if you have a different machinery tools tax for these types of
right,
projects?
Right, can you say solar machinery tools and taxes X, you know,
everything
industrial
else
machinery is, tools and taxes Y, everything else is
I don't have that answer right now. I can certainly look into that and find out. I want to say you probably could have a different machinery and tools tax based upon the classification of what it is.
I think that's right, but I need to check that too.
Yeah.
Something to discuss with the commission.
Yeah.
And similarly, I was wondering, talking about us having that 10-year depreciation now,
yep.
If you could have a 40-year for solar, but a 10-year, or unlimited for solar, but still maintain, like I wouldn't want to change the 10-year for everybody because we started introducing solar.
Well, and I think that's really determined by the commissioner as well for that 10-year period. So,
Mr. Shaw, can you also give us an idea of what the solar facilities that we have in the county, what they pay in taxes?
Yeah, I mean, I think we only have, I mean, one, the facilities that we have are small facilities right now. I think they're, gosh, two facilities, right, Mr. Miles? Yeah, two facilities under 3 megawatts.
They don't pay anything in taxes.
Yeah,
I think they're exempt from real estate.
I think they're exempt, and I think obviously they're paying some real estate thing, but I think because of the size of them, they're exempt.
So you're going to, is what you're saying, you're going to give us scenarios, and this scenario, if you chose A or B, it'd be this or that?
Yes, yeah, based upon, what we did is we got a couple scenarios for, say, a system between the 5 and 25 and a system greater than 25 megawatts. And VACO, we've been working with VACO on this. They've got some models, and there's some different information out there how you can. It's basically this big Excel formula, and it factors in a lot of depreciation levels in there. So we've got some numbers already kind of into this model. There's a few things we just need to confirm still before I think we're ready to say, yeah, this is definitely the way to go. I think we're pretty close, and I think by the next board meeting we could have that determination. As the board knows, there's some solar facilities that are already kind of out there, kind of approaching the county. And there's one solar company, if you see right here, an applicant for a solar project shall give the host locality written notice of the applicant's intent. We got a letter about that. So we need to get this kind of figuring out this revenue piece comparison. What is the best way to go with that? So, like I said, I think we'll definitely have something finalized by the next board meeting if the board makes a determination on. And if we determine at that point that the revenue share is the better way to go, we already have a draft ordinance that we could have the board ready to. And it's really a one-page draft ordinance, and it's really based upon, would you say, Mr. Payne, it's really kind of based upon state code mostly.
Oh, yeah. It's practically as nearly as possible. It just apes.
Yeah. So if we find that's the best way, then we could have the draft ordinance for the board to look at. Like I said, we'll certainly have the financial comparison to show you and a recommendation. And if we determine it's the revenue share, well, then we'll have the ordinance to go along with that.
To put it another way, as far as the ordinance goes, there's not a lot of choices in the text of the ordinance. The question is really, which one do you want? If you want it, you certainly be available to discuss it however you want, but I don't think you have much to chew on because it's pretty straightforward.
And again, by making this determination doesn't mean that this is just to have it in place. Whether or not the board approves any solar projects in the future, that's an entirely different piece. But we need to have that mechanism in place as they start coming forward.
And could you poll other municipalities of what they've done and why?
We have. It is all over the place. I mean, I'll give you an example. Louise County, they do the taxation piece. They don't do the revenue share because based on the way that they tax, it's more advantageous for them to do the taxation piece. There are a lot of localities that do the straight $1,400 because one, I'm assuming they determined that was more financially advantageous for them too, but then I guess two, a little bit, it's a known set quantity throughout the period of that asset's life. One thing to keep in mind too, from the taxation piece, if they do, if a project does replace equipment, once their equipment's replaced, that kind of starts the clock again from day one. So there are some things that we're not going to be able to really account for in some of that, for how equipment is or when it's going to be replaced, to really figure out a true revenue comparison. All we can do is saying this dollar amount of project here, and under our two taxation models, whether it's revenue, the revenue share, or the way we tax, here's what the total benefit to the county is over a 30-35 year period of time.
All right, any more questions for Mr. Dahl?
I'll just say this going in with the rest of the conversation coming another day. At Firefly today at the table, where there was something unrelated, and the subject at the table was solar. From the press to board members of other counties, and certainly the hottest topic I'm getting questions and thoughts from the public on is this right now. So
everyone is working on it, or they don't know what they want to do, or
some. I mean, it's everything from Appomattox saying none in A1, which of course is more than 90% of their land, to others being where we're at, to all different thoughts and options. So,
and some of them already having huge projects in their localities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, welcome, Mr. Chair.
I apologize.
That's fine.
I'm gonna try not to leave stuff.
All right.
Don't need mask. I could be in Florida.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Next is the consent agenda. We have minutes of March 15th, minutes of March 22nd, EMS supervisor's new hire salary, Dewberry Project Agreement number 18, CFMFP W23 baller for public works maintenance shop, CRMF and PW23 truck dump body purchase and installation, job description update communication officer and communication office 1, job description update communication team lead, new job description communication officer 2, job description update communication supervisor, temporary staff stipend for additional duties. And the last one is R&K Chrysler Vehicles contract. Would anyone like to pull any of those? If I hear no one wants to pull, can we have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So.
Do we have a second?
Okay.
I'm going to do the second, then I will say discussion.
Okay.
Second? Who's second?
I didn't.
Okay, we need a second.
No, I didn't. I was asking
you. You have a second? Okay, now it's your discussion.
Can we go back to the sign before? Can we pull J?
Yeah.
All right, we're pulling J, and J is EMS supervisor's new house sales.
I wanted to get some elaboration on what that is.
Yeah, we discussed this.
We discussed that.
We discussed it in closed session. It normally would have come out of closed session and ratified, but we were late.
I remember.
We were in a pinch coming out of closed session, so we said we were going to do it at the end of the meeting, and it just got missed.
I got you. Thank you.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Bryant, second by Mr. Sheridan, to accept the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. It's 5-0. Next, we have no unfinished business. And we did put trash on the new business, but do we need to talk anymore about it right now? Anybody?
Only we can summarize and have some. You got to have something for. I don't know. Something has come out of this.
Do you want us to kind of poke around and see like what some other folks are doing? What maybe are some other things that we can do and looking at.
Especially
what are
those that are affected by the orange not coming out anymore.
CDRJ. Well, I mean, we already talked about some of that, but there may be some things that penalties, enforcement, whatever it is, maybe we can see what are some other options.
I think it's good for you. Yeah, if you all can review it and then come back to us, and then some citizens have brought up having a like a county trash day, and of course, gosh, if you did that, look at how much organization people it took for the mile and a half on 15. You did that over the whole county. It'd be a pretty big.
And we did that some years ago, I think it was. And, you know, we did it right. I don't remember what it was. I think we did it kind of in conjunction with bring a trash bag and you got into the carnival.
You got a wristband or
something. Yeah. So we've done some stuff like that before. I mean, we could do it. I mean, it definitely takes lots of organization.
Yeah.
And
so they would engage the county in it, though, to where they'd have more ownership in not letting it happen again potentially for a little while.
Yeah.
Maybe a sort memory, but also, does VDOT still have Adopt a Highway, do we know?
I don't see the signs anymore like they used to.
I think they do.
You see them around, just not as many people are volunteering to clean it up, or if they clean it up, they just clean it up and don't worry about getting the sign.
Because they put their name on it, so they have responsibility, because it did put their name.
Yes, ma'am.
So maybe we can find out from VDOT how we tell citizens.
Promote it.
Yeah.
Okay, any other discussion about trash? If not, I will open up the second public comments. If you have a, like to talk to the board, please come to the podium and give your name and address. Do we have anyone who would like to speak to us about anything? Anyone online? You see anyone?
I don't see anyone raising their hand.
Anyone online? All right, then I will close the second public comment. And we will go to.
Madam Chair, can I interrupt one second just before we go to closed session really quick? There is one of the, so remember, I think three board members went to one of the solar meetings, community meeting that was held at Community Center, I apologize. They wanted to meet with board members to discuss their project some more. So I was thinking about setting up some 2x2 meetings, but I'm trying to gauge who would be interested in that, to meet with them to hear more.
I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, I wasn't there the first time, so I said I wasn't there the first time, I'd listen.
That'd be certainly.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions.
It sounds like everyone's there. So Mitt, like I said, they reach out to Ms. Lee. So we'll work with them to try and get some back-to-back, you know, dates where a couple board members at a time can meet and hear more and get some questions answered possibly.
They were also requested to do a second community. Has that been in place?
That's still
coming.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Yep.
I apologize.
Anything else?
Actually, I blanked out. This is actually for Mr. Spitzer. Mr. Spitzer, hello. Real quickly, I forgot to mention this when you were up, but thank you for putting up the soccer nets, the big ones.
Yep.
But I had a member of the community ask when will the smaller soccer nets be put up as well.
I will ask the organizer of SYSA.
Okay.
Because he did. I gave them the nets, and they put them up.
Super.
And they ask when they need them, and that's when I get them. So I ask if you need them.
Great, sorry, forgot to ask that.
So Mrs. Spitzer's answer was, people who are listening, that you are going to put up the small ones as well, right? Okay.
As soon as they ask.
Soon as they ask, thank you, ma'am.
Madam Chair, I move that the Nevada County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1 and Section 2.2-3711A5 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, county attorney position, and prospective industry, prospective business update. Always one of my favorites.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, a second by Mrs. Eager to go into closed session. Any discussion about going to all right, then. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? And Chair votes aye.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Sheridan, and of the individual polling.
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Sheridan?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. We are now in open session, and we're in our board budget workshop. Yeah.
Seven-ish.
Watch how to use that word.
Work. Which word?
Because I ain't going to be
yeah.
Stop sharing. Stop.
Yeah, it's not coming. I can't see your screen.
Well, now.
Now I can.
Okay.
All right. All right.
Yep, now I got it.
Let me just pull up the budgets here.
Now, Eric, you have it up? How do you want us to, any particular way you want?
Yeah, I'm just gonna, yeah, let me get rid of video panel. Okay. So changes from the last budget meeting. Let me make this. So changes from the last budget meeting. So we received some additional values from the Commissioner of Revenue. And what it does, you can see here, we were balanced before at zero at the budget that was advertised. Now with some additional taxable values, we have $121,000 addition. So what basically changed since then? We've got some additional CO'd properties, so that gave us $16,000 of additional revenue for real estate tax. We got a whopping $114 extra revenue in mobile homes. We got $180,000 addition in personal property. And then we've had reductions in business personal property and machinery and tools in the revenue associated with that. So all those together, we've got $121,000 surplus from what the board advertised as far as the budget goes. You know, a couple things at this point. So if the board remembers, and we can make these changes on the fly, which isn't going to change things dramatically. If you remember, as we discussed as part of the CIP transfer of the sheriff's vehicles and public works, what I was recommending was pulling the funding for two sheriff's vehicles out of this year's budget, putting it towards the public works building. So it's basically a swap in dollars. Again, sheriff's vehicles are getting funded sooner in this fiscal year versus waiting until the budget's done. And we did that just because we're trying to go through that. But from there,
they're available.
But from there, I mean, again, I think the board, and I'm trying to see who is here. Dr. Gretz is here. Great. again, you know, from there, we can go wherever the board wants to start taking a look at this point. Again, you know, we advertise an 84.5 tax rate, real estate a 4.15 personal property rate, and then 290, and $1.90 for business personal property and machinery and tools. I know there's some, Mr. Fairchild contacted me earlier and he had some questions about some of the school stuff. And I haven't had a chance to look at what you necessarily texted me, so I can't necessarily speak to that right at the moment, but happy to discuss with the board whatever direction they want to go.
Well, would you like to have
I think
the response?
Yeah.
Anything?
Thank
you.
So I think one of the... And Ms. Johnson's... And so one of the questions, Mr. Fairchild contacted me earlier, and he was just trying to get an idea of the breakout of the salary stuff for the schools. I said, well, I don't really know kind of what the breakout is. If you go back to the, and let me pull up the schools.
While he's pulling up, just to get clarity, it was, I'm not suggesting we do this, but just as one morsel of information, if we, just the increase to 7, just the increase of 7%, what that number is.
Yep,
and I think it's slide 22 might be what you're looking for. So the increase of 7 is a total of $2,371,570.
Thank you.
That's the total.
That's just to go to 7%.
Yeah, yeah. To go to 7. When you and I spoke earlier in the text that you haven't seen yet, so the figure that we had in there, and I can't remember if it's in this one or not, the only figure we've gotten from the state is associated with what the governor proposed in December. That's the template that's been released. And you remember his budget didn't include 7, it included 5. So the state revenue associated with that is the 1.5. It's $1,496,831. The 2 million that we put in here on slide 24, probably
right there, state template,
yeah.
2 million.
That is our best estimate of what that template is going to say if 7 is approved. And we went with that because both the House and Senate put forth 7%. So we're pretty confident that's going to happen.
So the cost of the 7% is $2,371,000.
Yeah.
And if the schools implement that 7%, they're estimating they would get a little under $2.1 million from the state to offset that 7%.
Is yes.
That, so I guess in fact it's a $300,000 cost to implement the 7%.
Right.
And then there's
our best estimate.
Yeah. And then again, that's just the 7. And remember, they also had they're trying to implement the compensation study above and beyond that to get the salaries with their competing localities.
And those details are broken out on slide 22. That's the total cost of each of those different scenarios, not including any state revenue.
So those total amounts equals, all of that equals the $3.7 million, which is the dollar amount right there. Should equal that, I believe. Is that correct, Mr. Dr. Rhodes?
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
So regarding the 7% minus state funding, please, how much?
Minus state funding, so
about 400.
I was gonna say it's 1.27.
Yeah, call it 2.4 minus 2.1. It's about 300. Just round numbers, around $300,000 is the county cost, assuming that this is what we get in state revenue for the 7.
And that's in the when we didn't fully fund.
Yeah, you didn't fully fund. You funded 2,250,000 out of their 2.674 requests. So you didn't fund about 400,000,
which would be
450.
The 2% differential there.
Yeah. Right.
So we funded 5 and they want 7. They're asking for 7, is that what you're saying?
No. I don't think we've got enough in there for 7 right now, I think. Dr. Redson, is that correct? If we're at 2.2,
depending on what the board did, to account for the difference between.
What's the additional funding from the state? You're saying the state, you're guessing you're going to get 2.1 million from?
Yes.
3.7?
Mm-hmm.
And the 3.7 is implement everything.
And 2.6 was going to do the 13% and everything else.
Yeah,
2.6.
And the additional staff positions.
Yeah.
Correct, but I mean, right. So.
2.6 would have included everything on slide 22.
Slide 22.
2.6.
I think you mean for.
No. Go back.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that was 2.7.
That's 2.7 total, but 2 million of it supplied by the state. But the 2.6, what Dr. Gretz, I believe, is saying is, it, with 2.6, it would do everything that they've asked for. Mm-hmm. Everything.
That was their ask.
That was the ask. Yeah, but that's 1.2 million above 7%, or 1.257, 1.27 million.
Because they're trying to get their scale.
1.24, yeah. 44,350. So 1.25.
Yeah, so this amount right here, the $3,719,350, is the sum of all of those amounts.
Plus everything, but I guess the point I'm making, yeah, is the sum of all those amounts.
Yes.
Correct.
But again, but above and beyond.
What I'm talking about is 2.6 million would have gotten all of that.
Would have got, yes.
And we're right now at 2.25. Mm-hmm. And now, so we're only 350 below that.
So I mean, I guess technically, let's say it this way. Obviously, the board doesn't choose how the schools allocate the funding, whatever funding they get. But from this 2.6, again, you're about $400,000 short. So there's, I guess, there's some combination of state and local items on here that, let's just say, that the board was choosing. There would maybe be some positions that couldn't be funded, but if you funded what you have now, they could probably implement all of the salary increases, but they're probably not going to be able to implement some of the staff positions that they're requesting. But again, whatever the county provides them for funding, they determine what that breakup is after that.
Because I can't be involved in a conversation if we're trying to go line by line.
And that's, I mean, to me, somebody who doesn't have any intimate understanding of how they came to the numbers other than what they present, I mean, I don't have any way to think of what I, to come up with what I think is right and fair without thinking about it line per line. And here's what, you know, I'm just pulling anything out of there. These positions, the current budget situation, you know, hopefully they can wait till next year. Well, they could use those funds for anything they want, but that's all I got other than just pulling a number out of the air. So I don't know how, it's just been a strange thing for me of trying to figure out how to decide what to fund when there's this much of an increase, when you don't have any, you're not getting but so much depth into it, you don't have any control where the money goes once you allot it. And it's just, it's a weird thing of almost picking, in some ways, a number out of the air of how much you're going to allot, which just doesn't seem...
Well, we don't pick the number. The school board picks the number, and they come to us and they say, here's what we believe is the number that, you know, based on the discussions... And
well, I mean, we pick either 2.6 or 1.6.
No, I know, but I'm saying the line-by-line budget they've got here, that's generated by the school board, right?
I understand.
And so, you know, if the school board comes in and asks this amount, and they come to us, and if we don't fund the full amount, then they go back to their lines and say, we're going to take this out of here, right? And so the challenge is almost always, I say the challenge from the perspective of what you're trying to say, I think, is almost always because we can't provide direction in terms of what they are going to pick or not. And in many cases, the first thing they almost certainly will pick will be the salary increases, right? So take that number, which is the big piece, and assume that if you underfund, they're going to take that number to begin with, and so they're going to take the other line item and look to cut from there. So whether that's, you know, in technology, or whether that's by not hiring a position, or by doing whatever, that's what ends up happening, which is one of the challenges when we don't meet their full ask. That's one of the challenges. Likewise, you can say, well, but every year they come back and return X amount, you know, because they're constrained by their budget, so are they really utilizing it? And arguments are made regularly that say, well, doesn't that mean that you overpaid them to begin with, right? But you're talking about and if you look at it as a percentage of their total budget.
One to two.
Yes. They have to do the same thing that we have to do. They have to be conservative because they don't want to have to come back to us in May and say, we can't pay our bills.
They can't
need another $300,000, $400,000, $500,000.
They can't pull money out of anywhere. So once they're done, they're done.
That's a felony for me.
Yeah. So if they're asked for 2.6,
that's a gross man. True.
You know, we make that calculation of saying, well, we'll give them, you know, we only want to raise the tax rate or whatever by this much.
I asked Eric to look for how much the board has given back for 5 years. I said to look up in the last 5 years, how much has the board turned back to us?
I'll pull that up.
Because that goes into our fund sometimes.
General fund. That's how we build our general fund, because we don't charge excess taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, we could be like the counties that I've talked to from around the state, that when they have a 14% jump in their appraisals, don't change your tax rate. And that all goes to the general fund.
So as Booker
tried to adjust it to where...
Right.
And I actually asked staff to produce something, and I don't know if they have or haven't had
We haven't had a chance to pull everything. Like I said, here is one that was talked about by Ms. Booker about the what was approved, what was amended, what was actually expended. So basically, at the end of the year, what was not spent, what was returned back to the county. So this column, unspent funds.
Right.
Now, don't look at 2023.
I was going to say, I looked down and went, holy cow, I didn't spend anything that year.
No. Again, we haven't done any transfers. So basically, look through 2018 through 2022. So those are return funds back to the county every fiscal year. And then what was requested from those funds.
So they only requested in 2018, $165,000 back.
They only had $427,000 to give back.
Yeah, right.
But they didn't request the other years.
Yeah.
And the next year, they haven't requested anything back. So
2021 is
so which you
one
see,
of those, 2020 and 2021 of those COVID?
Yep.
There was leftover money.
One thing, if I could just add this, the figure that you see for this past fiscal, the 1.3 million, you all will remember, I'm sure, that the House and Senate versions were, one was 1.2 million in additional revenue, and the other was 500,000. I mean, it was a dramatic swing, and they didn't resolve that until right before July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
And had the other one been approved, we would have been really glad we had that 1.3. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah. Want to point that out.
I mean, you know, well, I was sitting in class and that guy talking to us about budget. Y'all don't have to have it done until the 30th of June. I laughed at him.
So, yeah.
You're not a supervisor.
Yeah, right. And just real quickly, one other thought on that to what Sheridan was saying is, you know, that as our budgeting process has become more refined and more accurate and more detailed, part of what's changed is that there's been less money that comes back to the fund balance, right? You know, we've had, you know, some bonuses that have helped to restore our fund balance, but we were a couple of years back, and if it weren't for COVID, probably, you know, we were stretching kind of, quote unquote, what our fund balance, you know, beyond the 12% was available to us, right? And that's where, you know, the conversation that other counties have where they don't do it, they just don't change their rate. They absorb all that during equalization period. They use that to build their fund balance, which in turn, you could argue, helps to lessen the curve of changes, right? That is the piggy bank they have, so when they have to go build a new school, they're pulling money out of a fund balance that's substantially large. So that's looking down the future when you're doing that. And in this case, we're not doing that. We're going from 88 cents to 84.5 cents. If we plug that 4.5 cents back in, we would have another 1.6 million or so that would be going into fund balance.
It was 87.
Whatever, you get the point, right?
It's only 2.5. Mm-hmm. The only 700,000, or
probably 900,000, yeah.
Sit there. I'm doing my Jethro math.
Jethro. So is that, that's
thank
that,
you.
Yep.
Some of the items that are in the school board's budget also are mandatory. They're mandatory expenses that we would have to do before the board ever thought about doing salaries. You have to be able to do that.
And we don't have those broken out, do we?
You do. The literacy curriculum is mandated through the Literacy Act. We have to adopt that next year. I've put a placeholder of 280 just past curriculum. It could be 350, it could be 250.
Maybe I should have asked it a different way. As far as we don't have a grouping of which items are mandated, do we?
I can't remember. Well, I think you do. Slide 25, I believe, will do that. Yeah. So if you go back up to 24, they're not indicated on here which of those are mandatory.
So what was it?
84,000.
Literacy, English, and then.
And the assistant principal is not really.
So 100, 280.
I had commentary with that when I presented. I can go into that again. I wouldn't say it's mandatory. But
22?
Yeah. What's that?
2.674. I mean, if you took out just the, thank God, I hate to do that because our, especially the second one, our people are so deserving.
Yes.
But It's 1.43, and I imagine most of that 1.43 is probably, I mean, some of it's asked for positions, but.
What are you saying is 1.43?
It's what's left over if you take the 1.244350. 1.430 is left over, and they asked for 2.674. All right, is that, am I making any sense?
No.
Well, take away the two bottom asks right there on 22.
So the take away those two. Take away the 633 okay. And the 611.
1430, 1,430,000 is what's left over to do everything else. So part of that is have tos, part of it's positions, part of it's asking for insurance. Because I'm telling you, they already pay a boatload for insurance. That's the reason I'm not on. I hate to say it that way, but if you have a family, it's a mortgage payment. If you have a small house. In fact, at one point in time when I lived in Goosland, it was bigger than my mortgage payment. So does that make any sense of what I just said, Chris? Does that help break it down?
Yeah.
I mean, that leaves 1.43 for everything else it's asked for, including the 400,000. So take another 400,000 off of that because that's the insurance, the 7%. So you have 1 million. 1 million covers everything else that they ask for. Anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. It's close as I can explain it in layman's terms. How much of that 1 million do you think is new positions, Doc? Do you know? Have an idea? How many new positions was it? 5?
In this budget?
Yes.
What the school board approved?
Correct.
What slide do you want me to go to?
Right there is fine. The English language learner, that's the bottom of the white lines. Right, that's new.
84,000.
Yeah. Because I'm telling you, our English is a second language group. It's growing, ESL.
The coordinator of mental health right above that is new, and the instructional assistant above that is new.
And those ones are not required?
No. And then the second line, the assistant principal, would be new. The reason I said it was, I just refresh your memory about this. So last year, we were legally required to have an additional administrator at Central, one at Central, one in West Central. We worked around that by essentially getting rid of one of those and just having one school. The conversation during all that was, we don't want to change the way this is structured. We'll add the next administrator next year. So it's not really required. Had we not done that, it would be required.
And after a year of a principal and assistant working in that large school, 4-year-olds all the way up, and then you probably got about 12 kindergartens all the way up to your second grade, is a tremendous amount of work. I bless them if they did that in a year. They need that assistance. These are little people, a lot of them. So, see how you can take that away.
The one thing I'll say is we talked about the SOQs. And I brought this up the last time, and I apologize I did not get that to y'all, and I should have. The SOQ positions, it's 1 per 600 students, I think, for assistant principal, if I'm correct. I got it written down in the car.
That's
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How are you going to know who they are? That's why we got to get on there, state elected officials, to have that correction. I mean, the numbers
comes out of this budget, yeah.
Well, the numbers are just astronomical of what they reduced to. And it's not just AIDS. I mean, like I said, you know, when you're talking about, it might have been counselors were 300. It was one counselor per 300 students. And you get to know 300 kids in 1 year, individually. Mm-hmm. You ask them to do impossible things.
So the school budget is short by what, 400,000?
Right now, in the budget, the board has
$2,200,000.
Yeah, but we had a placeholder somewhere else.
Yeah, there was $60,000 that was...
some little placeholder.
We put it back in BOS contingency, I believe. Yeah, $62,000.
So, I mean, but my only thing I can tell you right now that I struggle with is that's the 13% and things of that nature. I mean, just, but I know that those guys struggle with it.
Who struggles with it?
The people that they have listed down there needing the 13%.
You're saying struggle with not having it?
Correct. If you look at the salary scale, I mean,
it sounds like it, what you're saying is it sounds like a big increase, but when you look at what their salary
scale is, where that's really going, but in other places it is a larger pay increase.
Well, keep in mind the 13 is a cap.
Correct.
That's not being given to a broad swing of people. We're using that methodology right there, and then capping them.
And looking at, because I was on. Local Composite Index, LCI. Mm-hmm. You know, and I apologize, I told y'all I had a great sheet. I showed it to Mr. Bell and I did not get copies to y'all. But it shows us sitting in the middle of three of the counties that have the greatest ability to pay.
Right. And Alfred.
That are flush with cash.
Yeah, and Alfred.
We're at 40%.
Right.
And neighbor to the east is twice as, has twice the ability to pay.
Right.
They're at 80%. For us.
Yeah.
And to our west, they're, if I remember correctly, they're the ninth highest paid elementary teachers in the state of Virginia, including Northern Virginia.
Who are you talking about?
And Virginia.
Alvin Walsh also.
And Virginia is of that
list, the chart that they gave us, it's just a graph, and it says, well, we throw out the outliers because they're just outlandish. Two of the top nine that they throw out for Charlottesville and Albemarle. We can't compete. We could. We'd be looking at a ridiculous tax rate.
Well, you just look at Virginia in comparison to national, to the whole state.
Well, yeah, but I'm going apples and apples. The best chart that I've ever, or best statistic I ever heard somebody say was at the board of directors meeting. He said, the guy goes in, Virginia is 37th in the state of Virginia.
Wait.
I mean, 37th in the United States, lowest. And being the pain in the butt that I am, what happens if you take away Northern Virginia, it gets a cocoa? 47. There are only three below us.
Right.
So, I mean, you know.
Right.
We can make whatever we want to make. But what can we afford to make?
Virginia is like number five in the country for economic and business, right?
We're trying to work on that.
And
right
yet,
now.
We're number 37 for schools. And to your point, we would be number 47 if you took out Northern Virginia, which is pretty pathetic, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. So we've got, just kind of driving down to the point here, we've got 121,000 plus 60,000. You know, does the board have appetite to take the school budget, or does the board not want to do that? You know, does it want to reduce it? You know, I mean, we're kind of beating this around, right?
So, all right, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is,
I have a hard time,
you know,
outbidding our neighbors.
Say what?
I think we buy off more than we can chew sometimes.
I didn't hear you.
I don't understand what you're saying. Are you saying you want to cut the $2 million? Is that what you're suggesting?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm open to suggestions besides raising.
Besides raising it. Okay, so I would say that we spent $108,000 of the $121,000. I recognize that it's for this current fiscal year coming out of fund balance, but in essence, come July 1, it's just changing the math from one line to the other. So even though we have $121,000 and $62,000, you know, you're really looking at $108,000 of that.
Well, I'll see if we keep the rates where we got them right now.
I mean, I feel personally, I feel this is an enormous you know, it was an enormous ask to begin with, but I think it was a justified ask. If the board is comfortable providing more, I'm not going to argue about it. I would be okay voting for this budget. Yeah, I would be okay voting for this budget, but if there's, if the board comes out and says, well, we got another $182,000 and meets halfway, then, you know, I'm not going to vote against that, because I think that what's going to happen, and I think what the schools are expecting, is that there'll be a compromise on the budget, and that differential will probably be met anyhow. And so I think this is a year, that's a guess, I could be wrong, but this will be a year in which the schools will really be able to implement their full plan that they want to put in place. And if they implement that plan, we'll get some money back. The school board has already said that they would do that. If they got money above the 2.6, at least one member has said that. I can't speak for the other members. But, you know, it sounds like that, you know, that's something that we built and worked with the school board to create a pattern of, you know, trust in between, you know, what they say and what we do. And I think that, you know, I'm optimistic that the legislature will come to a compromised budget which will help to meet this full budget that they're asking for. And to the degree that it isn't fully met by us, it will be met by that compromise, and to the degree that is more, they will return that excess balance. So that's kind of my viewpoint on this.
So you think we should give them the full amount? Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying I'm comfortable with this. I mean, in essence, what we're saying is we can take the $121,000 and the $62,000 and reduce from 84.5 cents to 84 cents, right? We could do that. Or we could take the $121,000 and the $62,000 and give it to the schools, right? What I'm saying is that my feeling in looking at this budget, if the rest of the board is kind of on the same place, is, you know, that there's a very good chance that the compromise that will be met by the state legislature will fill that $400,000 gap, maybe exceed it, and that the school board has come back and said that if it goes above the 2.6 million.
One member.
Well, one member, again, I said that, you know, but I think, again, there's, you know,
well,
it's one member, right?
Okay. One member, but then you said the school board.
I stand corrected, that's fine, okay.
I
stand corrected, but what I'm saying is that we have traditionally worked hard to establish a pattern with the school board when we're talking about this thing and saying, so what we hear you saying is if you end up with a budget of $3 million, you're going to give us that $400,000 back, right? You know, now we can't make them do that, but if they don't do that, then we'll remember that, right? You know, we'll remember that, you know? So, you know, I mean, and we do remember those things, right? I'm comfortable with the relationship and where we are, and I think that we are meeting 90% of the ask, which is fantastic. And, you know, if it's important to the other members to try to reduce from 84 cents to, I mean, 84 and a half cents to 84 cents, so be it. I mean, I think that's okay. But, I mean, you know, as Mr. Sharon's pointed out, there are counties that don't change their rate at all. They just take all that money and put it back in fund balance.
So do you all hear two decisions that we're talking about?
We haven't heard any decision. We've heard an opinion.
Pardon?
We haven't heard any decision, ma'am.
No. Decisions to be made. There are two. That's what I'm saying. There are two. You can't have two decisions. Maybe I worded it wrong.
But we have two.
If we take the
183,
whatever, nine, and put it to the school, or we take it off of the tax.
$121,000
and $83,967. We can take that off of the tax rate, or we can add it to the
school's tax. And to Mr. Sheridan's point, you could take that off of the personal property instead of the real estate tax rate if you wanted to take that $180,000.
Wherever it comes from.
Right, wherever. And I think there's an argument to be made that we just spent $108,000 out of fund balance to put the light in on the ball fields, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a good argument to be made there.
So all of this discussion is about $180,000?
No, ma'am. It's about where you want the budget to end up, ma'am.
Yes. Well, but it's a piece.
It's a piece of that discussion.
Yeah.
Chris, what do you think?
I mean, we don't have to make decisions until next week.
You have more questions?
Right.
You have more questions than answers. If you have more questions...
No, not necessarily questions to ask somebody right here. I'm still putting it together. But again, the difference is, it just sounds so strange to me, but not that it can be any different. How do you all feel about, what about this number? When we vote on the budget for the county, we're voting based upon line items and we are to make a decision where that money goes. How do you feel about 2.4, 2, 1.8? It just seems against financial intelligence. And I'm not saying, I know that's the system. I'm not speaking against what anybody does or questioning. It's like a feel of how much money you should get. Just doesn't seem to fit into finance.
But isn't that what the school board is doing though? I mean,
well, they know their line items and they know what they're right. They know what they're going to do with the money once they get it.
Right, but I mean, what I'm saying is, in the same way we're going through a budgeting process right now for everything else, they go through that budgeting process for the schools.
Right.
And so, you know, there are a number of counties that implement category, line item, if you would. It's only five categories, I believe, that you can do. Construction, technology, et cetera. Right. So they have that categorical budget. So some county boards vote on that categorical budget line item. That's not what we've got implemented here. The majority do it the way we're doing it right now. But what I think I hear you saying you're struggling with is that somehow or another you're supposed to be second guessing what the school board is doing and what they've done with their budget, right? And I'm not saying you specifically because this is something that I always say is, you know, are we shopping a tax rate or are we meeting the needs of the county, right? So that's the challenge, and a lot of times it's politics is the art of compromise. You know, the art of compromise is, okay, you know, you feel this way, I feel this way, she feels that way, and the votes come out accordingly.
So you put it a good way, and you have said it that way before, shopping a tax rate or meeting the needs of the county. And I just don't like shopping a tax rate. You know, I said a couple meetings ago, we were talking about, you were mentioning being competitive with other counties and so on, and if you remember I said, I don't really care what the other counties are doing. I want to find what's right for us to spend, what's needed, and then spend that money. Which, of course, I don't have the ability, but to a certain extent, to do that when it comes to how much money we're allotting to school, although it's such a huge amount of money. And so it's just I probably am over-talking it because there's nothing that's going to get it passed where it does come down to a field where you are shopping a rate. And how much can the taxpayer bear? But it just seems odd. Doesn't seem.
So, again, I don't know if the board wants to make a decision. Let me just bring up two other items that were brought to my attention, too, that's budget related. It's one small, one's less small.
I'm sorry.
Smaller and smaller.
Yes. No, small and big.
Small and big.
So one, we received a request from the ARC to get funding again in this budget. And if you remember, the board approved $3,000 last year. Now, that's not in this budget. And this request came in after all the budget requests had already been.
You want me to talk about it?
Sure.
I mean, it's in our district. It's what we did last year to allow them to pay somebody to cut the grass. And they cut the grass not only there, but at Company 3. And I think I got an email from Mr. Bowles, passed forwarded on to Mr. Dahl, and they're just asking for that again because they have the four elections there and things of that nature.
No, it's $3,000.
$3,000.
It was $3,000 just to cover grass for whatever.
Didn't they say last year that they were, I don't remember, that they were thinking that was going to be a one-time funding, or there was some discussion.
I think that was a conversation.
Sort of a conversation, but I don't think they're renting as often as they need to.
But then we just would have to accept that's a yearly lineup.
I don't know what the cost is per month.
It's $3,000 a year?
Yes.
What's the cut? How much is each cut? How many is it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't get into how much it costs them to cut their grass. We've got an MOU. We provided money in the past for upgrades to the building, to use the building from elections, senior stuff.
While we're talking about it, I will say this one has been brought up also, and maybe something where we look into a generator for that building in case during elections power goes out, if we have a thunderstorm. Because if power goes out, wherever they vote, if they vote at Fort Kenyon School, does that already have a generator outside for that, a backup generator?
Where?
Fort Kenyon.
Can you say that?
No.
That's where they vote, correct?
Yeah, it'll be the dam, and
we should probably, for election cycles, just rent a couple of generators.
We have some generators.
The only reason that was brought up was because we had talked about using it as an emergency shelter. Help if you don't have
Let's get back power. To what we were saying. What about the ramp, handicap ramp?
That's been done, I think.
Did we do that?
Somebody did it?
I don't know.
I think that was done last year.
I want to go back to, I feel like the context was that was a last year thing, that it was not going to be reoccurring.
I told the gentleman I would ask, or pass it on to Mr. Dahl to ask.
But can we finish the school before we do that?
Sure, yeah.
What's the big one?
Well, the only other thing is this was brought up by some of the chiefs about the burn building.
Oh.
Again, it was brought to my attention that, well, look, there's no money in the CIP for the burn building to finish the burn building. And my question was, you're right. Normally those requests come from FRA, but we've been working on this burn building for a while, and so we have a $450,000 grant, and November, if something's not done with moving forward with the burn building, most likely we're probably not going to be able to get another extension to the grant. But as we discussed with the board, the burn building's probably, we've got a meeting coming up where we've got another vendor we're going to talk to, but again, the last kind of proposal for that is about 1.1, 1.2 million.
It's like way out of
it. So we're about, call it 750, 800,000 short. And
originally it was going to be 600,000 or 800,000.
It was going to be probably about 750, 800, but yeah.
So the next meeting that we have, that's next.
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, and it's that budget period.
So yes, next Wednesday are the two public hearings, and then there's time for budget discussion after that. Mm-hmm. I don't imagine that the public hearings should take very long. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just public hearings on the budget, and if no one comes to speak about the budget, well, those are going to be pretty quick public hearings because it's just two, and so there is time for budget discussion. But really, I would prefer that we have the budget put to bed by next week if we can, if we know where we're going to be.
Right.
So
are you saying decide next week or decide tonight?
No. I would say if we had a decision by next week, after we have the public hearings, that then we can put something in the board package for the following week that goes up.
Will that be the third meeting when we do the final?
That's when you would April 19th is when you adopt the budget.
So what additional information do you need, Chris?
Nothing I'm going to get sitting here tonight.
Go to the school board office and sit with Brenda
potentially.
And Dr. Gretz and go through nine?
Potentially.
I think that would be.
And going back to this budget and schools and us working together, I think the most we've ever given is 1.5 since I've been on the board. And that was our first year when it got slashed the year before. And we came back and added 1.5 million the next year. I don't remember us going higher than that. We've been over a million once or twice, like 1.1 or 1.3. Most of that has been like 700,000, 900,000. When the ARPA money came, it was nothing. It didn't go up.
Yeah, I think that the 1.5 million was still, you know, like a million short of where they were cut. So.
Well, it, like I said, but yeah, we bit off a big chunk.
Yeah, we did.
And that was huge. Yeah, now we're looking at 1.1 above that.
I don't think
775,000 above that.
Right. I don't.
Food, that's just food for thought. I'm not trying to start an argument or anything.
No, I'm not trying to start that. But I mean, if your point is this going to be the new pattern that they come to us every year for 2.2 million?
No, that's not my point. I'm just making a statement. Yeah. That's all I did. Yeah. I don't sit here and try to make points.
Why can't we in the future maybe have more history of what we have done in the past, so we can have a clear picture and stop. You know, we have to guess at what year do we do this and what year do we do the other. Let's have that information in front of us.
Well, it also depends on the school board too.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about
past. I'm saying, you know, the school board may choose. We could have a school board that comes back next year and says that their budget is going to be 600,000. You know, I don't know the answer to that. You know?
Yeah, I'm not looking for next year. So. I'm looking for what's the history.
Right.
Well, the history got thrown in the loop about 4 years ago, and everything got screwed up, for lack of a better word.
So we're not making any decisions tonight on this 121,967.
Yeah, I mean, what we can do for next week, if you want. I mean, one, as I discussed, we can do the flip-flop on the CIP from the sheriff's vehicles to public works. But again, that's a wash. Again, if the board wants to do the 3,000 to the ARC, you know, you could pull it out of this contingency money. If the board wants to fund what is the potential for the burn building. Now that's a different story because we would have to, because remember, we can't increase the total budget. So if we're going to fund that, you're going to have, something else is going to have to
decrease. But I mean that.
You can't, because the budget has to decrease at this point. The total budget amount has to decrease.
But what I don't understand is if the burn building was a priority, why would that be part of their CIP request? And why wouldn't we be looking at that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess to play devil's advocate on their side too, maybe from their standpoint, maybe they're waiting to see if it's just going to be funded as part of the project. I mean, really all we can do at this point, we're going to meet with this other vendor here. I think it's coming up next week sometime to hear if they have any thoughts or ideas. I mean, and maybe we'll get a better idea at that point. And maybe ultimately, I mean, again, we've put it out for bid a couple times and we either have gotten most recently no responses at all, or it's been expensive. So maybe by next, I'll have to check. I think the meeting is early next week, so I'll have to see if there's any updates from that point. But you know, at some point we're gonna have to make a move on it, or we just need to say, look, grant funds need to go away. Yeah.
So Dr. Grass, do you have anything you want to say to us?
No, I'm happy to answer any questions, but I don't have anything additional.
Okay.
I appreciate you having me here and appreciate all the thoughtful consideration of all this. I know it's a difficult thing.
Is there anything the board wants staff to come back with? I know, Mr. O'Brien, you had a couple things. We got those written down to pull that. I mean, is there any other information that...
Well, one thing I was going to say, going back to the burn building, and two things. The ARC Hall, they asked for three. I think they'd be extremely happy if we gave them just enough to cover the grass cut. 1,000 or 1,500 or something of that nature. Because what happens is it's just somebody, whoever's free, drives their lawnmower from wherever to drive up there and go to it. And the second thing is, and I mentioned this before, but reaching out to some of our bigger companies or perhaps even a new company and see if they would be willing to help get a tax write-off, or I don't know how you'd call it, pro bono to do some of the dirt moving, because the excavation was huge for that project.
You're talking about the burn building?
Burn building, yeah. I think excavation was like 250,000 of the 1.1.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, or if they do it at a reduced rate, I mean, I'm sitting here in the back of my head going, Mr. Cox might be a good guy to talk to, because I bet you he had something to do with Goochland getting there.
That's a good idea. If I recall correctly on the burn building, the reason the discussion was this was going to be the last time is because it was suggested that be part of the quote-unquote nonprofits ask, you know, for a budget for that line item.
That's like you said, burn building?
I didn't mean the burn building, the ARC.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because that came out of line, and I think Chris had brought up, well, why isn't this part of the other ask? It was kind of a last-minute thing. So I think that's why the conversation was this is going to be the last time, because the thinking was that they would come back and make the formal request at that point in time, and the budget couldn't end up.
One of the things that said,
I think that's what happened, and how that conversation went. Which, if we do it this time, they better do it next time, because you know.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, there's before I was on. How much money did you all give?
$30,000. We get $30,000 to do renovations,
and that was because we use it for elections, and it came back and it's more money because we use it for elections, and now it's more money because we use it for elections. I wonder if y'all would have given him $30,000 if you had known that it'd be $3,000 a year every year after. I suspect not. And, you know, I asked then last year, I said, well, what about Three Chalk Community Center? What about the VFW Hall? These different ones, why aren't we then giving them money? I don't know how we can give $30,000 that was for us using it for elections, but then start to fund part of the yearly operations money for one and not everybody else who asked for it. I think it'd be a different conversation if the county didn't give that big chunk of money.
Well, maybe we should have thought about the place needed the grass cut and put it in the project.
It was one time.
I'd have to come back there and ask for it. Yeah.
But $30,000.
Yeah, and after the $30,000, we knew what we were going to use that for.
It was roof, the windows, the roof, air conditioning. It had no air conditioning, so the people who were there for the elections in June.
Floor, the kitchen.
Suffered.
Sure.
Yeah, floor,
and there was a lot of volunteer work.
I'd probably voted for it. I'm not saying it was a bad spend.
And they used to have volunteers to cut it before. And we don't have that now, so that changed. The situation changed, so that's why they.
And FLD didn't have a bus driver, I drove the bus.
Yeah.
Saved them $100.
Okay.
So nothing the board wants us to come back with?
Anything else you want to come back with? Ms. Johnson, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I very much appreciate, Madam Chair, the opportunity. I won't be here next week because we have our own meeting, so I won't be able to speak at the public hearing. And I would just like to remind you, 7% sounds wonderful, and it is wonderful, but it doesn't improve our position at all. Everybody's going to give 7%, at least 7%, if this is what the state comes up with. That doesn't improve our position relative to anybody. That's all I'd like to say, so thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe we need to bring that chalk back.
That's a good point.
That chart. Dr. Graves, you know the chart that you made, you all made. I think you compared it to.
Somebody's on you.
Anybody else? You compared it to 5 counties?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
4.
We started with 9.
City? Yeah.
Started with 9, including us, and then went to 5, including us, 4 others. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to have
1 city and 3 counties. Two of which are in the top 9.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could bring that chart back next time. I mean, I think a lot's been said about that. But,
and we need to also know how is the, the index is
local
decided.
I will go outside
index.
And get that sheet and bring it to Mr. Dahl.
I'll grab it and we can make copies.
We can make copies.
Yeah.
It just really does explain what you've been trying to explain to me before, especially with the SOQs. It's got everything written down. And I mean, look at that.
It
just makes you scratch your head and go, who came up with these numbers?
But Mike, does it tell how they come up with the index? had.
Oh, they told me that. Oh, God, we went through that in class.
Dr. Betts, you know.
I got an F in that part.
We need to know what those.
The composite analysis?
Dr. Betts knows.
You probably have a history of how ours have gone up. It has been like 3.6, 3.8, now it's to 4. And that's because of our ability to pay. And what is that based on?
It's a really convoluted formula.
It is, but at least it's a formula that we need to understand. I mean, we may not totally.
I don't think you're right. The best thing I can tell you is this, Ms. Booker. They showed us one, and every one of them that had a dark blue, 0.8%, either had a lot of federal money coming in because they had bases or prison or power plants. And they literally said that.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. But that's what we just.
Would it take much, maybe it's a lot too much study, to add Cumberland and Buckingham into that chart?
We definitely can do it. I think trying to do it by next Wednesday when everybody's off this week for spring break would probably be impossible.
Yeah, it's not something just go to the internet and look up and
But maybe not. I mean, if it's important to you to see it, we'll get it done.
Well, I appreciate that. I guess I would take your discretion on what you find out, how much effort it would be. If it'd be a lot of effort, don't. If it wouldn't be that much, then it'd be, to me, it's good comparison data to have. But I don't, you are working hard.
Definitely could do it. Certain positions wouldn't be difficult to find. It's when you get into the weeds of some of the leadership positions and things like that it can be difficult.
So when you did, you said you started off with 9?
Including Savannah.
Culpeper, Green, Buckingham, Cumberland.
We did Charlottesville, Albemarle, Nelson, Green, Orange, Madison, Louisa, and Savannah. And?
Not Goochland?
And Goochland.
But you didn't go south of the river at all? Except for Nelson.
No.
And you only compared teacher salaries.
No, we did them all.
Yeah. And you did custodians. Yeah. And if you look through that book that you all gave us, you can look at
every 12 position.
Months, 10 months custodians. Most of those positions, you have to work in the county for 30-some years before you even get to 30,000 mark when you retire. So you start off really. No, and some of them low is 2 years in a row. Used to be 3. You got the same salary 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. So now maybe 2. So it's a lot of little things that you have to look at to see how people struggle. But a lot of those people wouldn't even be able to go in Colonial Circle. Wouldn't be able to afford it. And they're working 12 months. They don't make the salary.
Why wouldn't they be able to go into Colonial Circle?
Because they don't make the money. They wouldn't may not make.
They wouldn't fall in the range of 40 to 60.
If they're below, if they're that 60% or below, they're gonna.
But that's what I'm saying. They may not.
They would help somebody else because they'd be about 20 to 25.
Right. So.
They would leave them room to play with the numbers. If that makes sense.
So let's, to me, let's adjourn and come back and make a decision.
I'm not ready to call for an adjournment yet.
Okay.
It's like you always make a motion.
We finished. I'm just messing with you crazy.
No.
You all finished, everybody? We know what we're going to do, and we'll be back and have at it again.
Well,
all right.
I mean, I'm sitting here, just sitting here with my math. When you just look at the school system, 1.43 gets you the 7%, and anything we do above that allows them to spend it where they deem necessary.
And to Ms. Johnson's point, 1.43 keeps us exactly where we are.
That's what I'm saying. I understand that, and I'm agreeing. I'm just saying, anything we do above that is stuff where they can put the money where they deem necessary.
Well, that's
That's a good point.
Actually, it's probably more like 1.7, because I know I'm probably wrong. But I'm just throwing out numbers.
Yeah, right. And what he just said, Dr. Gregson, Ms. Perry ought to be thinking about what he said. What about that other, you know, what do you want?
Dr. Gregson, I'm in the ballpark, correct?
For say it again, what are you saying?
Taking the two numbers that you showed on the 22, this 1.244.
That's
the 1,244,350.
Okay. That's the $600,000.
If you took that off of the 2.674, which I know I'm not exactly right, but close. If you took those away, then anything we go above, let's say I'd probably guess 1.7, gives the ability to adjust some. Does that make sense?
I'm honestly not sure I'm following.
Take the two things, the two additional.
Just looking at the teachers.
Right. Well, no, just looking at the teachers and the instructionals and everything. I'm trying to.
So he's saying these two numbers right here, the 633 and the 611.
Okay, I'm wrong. Right. Because that's
the total cost of doing the other scales. So the first is the total cost of doing teacher scale.
Just teachers.
Just teachers. The second one is
okay.
Those
so that's
four
not
scales.
7% everywhere. Well, take everything I just said.
That includes
the seven. That includes it. So 2,475 includes 7%
for everyone
and whatever it
bus
takes.
Bus drivers and everything.
No,
it's included that's in there. The difference would be if somebody, so for example, look at the bottom one.
Okay.
Our methodology was to bring each band to fourth out of fifth. Okay, so bring them to be not last. And then to move them, when we move them on the band, we use that methodology that I described before that was kind of taken from what the county did last year. We give years of service in that position and put them on where no one got more than 13. But if someone got less than 7, they would get less than 7 in this model. We built this before that happened. So there is enough funding in what the board passed and what you're looking at here to give everybody 7. But this model wasn't built on giving everybody at least 7. It was built on making sure that each band was not last, moving people using the methodology where they go, and making sure nobody got more than 13. If somebody was closer to being fourth out of fifth, they may not get 7 or 13. They may get 4. Or in this case, it would be at least 5, because this one was built on the governor's budget. I hope I'm making
and
sense.
And I guess to some degree, to Mr. Sheridan's point, 7% is what, you know, in essence, we're stuck doing it to a certain degree. And the differential is 4.35% if you look at the teachers, because you're going from 7% to 11.35%. So you're really kind of balancing. Yeah. And we'd like to be more competitive, so we're asking for an additional 4%. I think that's the way to maybe think of that.
Yeah. Right. I was looking at it as the two parts at the bottom were different.
Right. It's just the different categories.
Okay,
all right.
So
I'm
ready
for to
adjourn.
Still made.
Okay.
Are you ready,
Musa?
I'm ready.
Good. I've already made the motion. Somebody can second it.
I second.
All right, most premise.
Can we have a discussion, please?
Bye. Mr. Fairchild, and no discussion.